This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. And a collective sigh falls over the city and the fans of the Winnipeg Jets. They beat the Oilers. We'll delve into that. 5-2. They head to Vancouver, are in Vancouver, and will get ready after a day off today for the Vancouver Canucks on Thursday before returning home to take on the Carolina Hurricanes. The week that is for the Winnipeg Jets got off to a much better start than the week that was indeed. The Monday Night Football game, we'll delve into that. CFL wrapped up its regular season for the week yesterday in Montreal as well. Major League Baseball playoffs, more on the Bombers as well. As Kevin Olszewski just told you there, they'll be looking to see where and if Matt Nichols is on the practice field today as the Bombers get back at it. They host the BC Lions on Saturday afternoon. Big sports day in the city on Saturday. Brian Munns is going to join us live from Vancouver. Milt Stegall is going to talk some CFL. Jason Cole is going to wrap up week five with us. We'll open the Boss Pizza fan line for a full hour of your phone calls, NHL news and notes. And, of course, we're going to qualify two people for our Hockey Nights in Vegas contest. Congratulations once again to our third grand prize winner yesterday, Sharon. Jim Tilth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you. Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning, man.
A little nippy out today.
Well, you know what, though? It doesn't hit you as hard when the boys pull it together and shine a little bit like that. A little bounce in everybody's step. People friendly on the drive-in. It's a great day to be alive.
You see a lot of people in the drive-in, do you?
Oh, heck yeah.
Do you really?
Well, I'm coming down Route 90, man.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, there's plenty of folks.
Weaving in and out.
Yesterday was a little bit quiet.
Yes,
weaving in and out.
Happy Thanksgiving to everybody, by the way. Yeah. Post-Thanksgiving.
It felt good. That was fun.
It was no Picasso, but
it was something approaching a Picasso compared to what we've seen. And even I was talking to a couple of buddies during the – even those two goals that were scored, it was like, well, neither was an offensive – you know, there was nothing horrible that led to either of those goals. Yeah, right? Yeah. So it was like – and they both basically said the same thing coming back to me, but – I thought it was pretty darn good. To me, it was like structure maintained. You know, like it was like finally to see for the most part things in the defensive zone were as you'd expect them to look, maybe, right? So that was the one thing that stood out for me.
On a totally different note, I'm just reading on Pro Football Talk. As if he doesn't have enough problems, former Dolphins line coach Chris Forster owes the IRS nearly $600,000.
Oy.
Might be some of the habits. Those are expensive habits. Both what was in the video and who he was sending it to are expensive habits.
Yes. Amen to that, yeah.
We'll delve into that as well. Jason Cole, the NFL, coming up. Shouldn't laugh, but I am. So you mentioned it. Not a Picasso. It was close to a Picasso. Couldn't have gotten any worse. And I guess that's where we'll rate this game. I mean, they're in Vancouver. They'll have a day off today. Brian Munns will tee up the rest of the week heading into the game on Thursday. If they come back 2-2, I honestly thought the Jets would start the season 2-2. It might be the wrong 2-2. I thought they'd do better against Toronto, who's on fire out of the gate. I thought they had a chance in Calgary, maybe get a point. I did not have them beating the Edmonton Oilers in Edmonton. So, obviously better than what you saw in the first two games. How much better, though, and how big of a win is that without the circumstances around it just to go into Edmonton and take one off the Oilers, who have the same record as the Jets now?
I think it's a pivotal win. Had they have gone in, and they needed to pivot, right? Like, for Pete's sake, they had to get back on track, and they did. And so I think it's fairly monumental. Certainly, upon reflection, if the Jets go on to make the playoffs or just to have a decent, solid season, this game will be remembered to some degree to me because of the nightmarish start. Had either of the first two nights have repeated itself last night, the conversations just would have been that much stronger than they were the first couple of nights. So it was monumentally necessary to come out and and go grab a win, but even more so than the win, that they were able to maintain like things. They looked like a team last night that is tuned in, and that level of structure that was maintained for the most part in the defensive zone was just a breath of fresh air. Desperately needed.
It could have got real hairy real quick, right? So that was kind of the main thing, is that at least they were able to show a bit of resolve there and just kind of just really keep things from going completely, you know, number two hits the fan, because that's where it would have been if they had given up two quick ones to tie it and then found a way to lose a game that they were seemingly destined to win. So it was at the very least a great response when it could have been easy for them to kind of turn things off like they had, maybe more so in Calgary than Toronto.
Couple big storylines around this game. Nick Ehlers, of course, the hat trick. We'll delve into that.
How about that? Wrister was beauty.
Yeah. Dustin Byfuglien did not play yesterday, did not skate with the team at practice on Sunday, and then did not take the pregame skate on Monday either. Blake Wheeler did not practice on Sunday either. He did take the pregame skate and play in the game. And then, of course, Connor Hellebuck gets his not only his first start of the season, but his first win against the Oilers, coming in and making 37 saves on 39 shots. We'll start with him and your thoughts on Connor Hellebuck's play last night.
He had a real solid game for sure. I just can't believe. I heard it again this morning here, and you know, reading the national narrative or the NHL narrative on the level of struggle of Steve Mason up to this point in time, and people leading off talking about the Jets about that. Like, how about you watch a freaking game and then get back to informing your listeners or readers on, you know, what's going on here with the Winnipeg Jets. But Connor Hellebuck looked pretty darn solid. No question about that. I also don't doubt that Steve Mason would not have put in a real solid game with what was in front of him in comparison to the first couple of games. So it was nice to see Connor Hellebuck come in, have an opportunity, and shine. You wonder what happens here with Vancouver. You know, how dedicated they are to having Steve Mason as their starter, as opposed to any sort of a battle or platoon type situation, but it was nice to see him play well.
Yeah, he was great. There's no other way to really put it. He was great. And especially in the first period when, again, things could have went extremely haywire and you had the penalty 10 seconds into the game, and Edmonton was pretty content with, you know, throwing a lot of rubber towards the net early on, which, you know, when they weren't able to score there, any goalie will tell you, if you let me get into a game, with some of the shots that they had, and there were some good ones early on, sure, but a lot of the ones were ones he could see from fairly far out. That was kind of a promising sign, I thought, for how the goaltending was going to play out for the team that night. But he made some real big saves. Didn't really have much of a chance on the two ones that he did let in. Got a bit of luck with the post as well, but I don't know if he could have asked for much more out of Hellebuck last night in his season debut. I thought it looked great, and I thought you could noticeably see some improvements from his game last year.
First game of the year, I thought he looked really good too. So, is it any question who you go with on Thursday?
Yeah, I think so. I think that depends on their organizational view or understanding of what Steve Mason is, and if he is like rubber stamp the starter. I think if he is, then you go back to him. But if this is a spot that is still competitive, like, right, who's going to grab it, or are they just going to go and play with the hot hand? Then you go with Hellebuck. So to me, this we'll get a pretty good indication of where the organization is at with this position as to who starts next.
Yeah, I'm not so sure who gets the start. I'm not sure how they're going to go with that one. Even if you think Mason is your number one guy, I wonder if you put Hellebuck back in just because you kind of need wins to right the ship a little bit early on, because you lose in Vancouver, and you know how much grace does that one win in Edmonton get you? Zippo, right? It'll be a nightmare again come Friday morning. So I wouldn't just pencil in Steve Mason just yet.
Yeah, I don't know where to go with this, and it's not the usual. Do you go back to the number one guy? Do you do this? Do you do that? It's the new A. I think Mason's been hung out to dry, so the team's played better. But then there's a storyline, well, the team played better in front of Connor Hellebuck. And as you said, it's never too early to rack up some wins if you're the Winnipeg Jets. The whole proverbial, you know, go with the hot hand, all this stuff, but Mason is the starter. Like, I thought during that game against Toronto, there was a couple times when we were sitting on press row, guys were like, do you pull him? Do you yank him? When do you do it? Do you not? And the whole storyline around that, because if it's your guy and he's been around for 2 or 3 years, you pull him, I think, against Toronto a lot sooner than you did. The fact that it's his first game, new coach, new city, you don't want to yank him too soon and you know, not give him a chance when it's not really his fault. All those storylines go into it. So it's going to be interesting. They'll have an off day today, but I don't know what you do with it either. I think it's Steve Mason's job. He's number one. But I also think that come January, February, if somebody's playing better than the other guy, you lose the job. And I don't think they're there yet, so I don't know what you do. I don't know if hey, the guy's played way better, get back-to-back games with that play, and we'll give Mason a much better team and a much better game in front of him. Mm-hmm. Or you go, you know what, Connor, you played really well, and the team played well in front of you, so let's get something on a roll here.
I think ultimately what it does is let us know how committed they are to Steve Mason being the starter. If Connor Hellebuck's back in there, to me it's an open competition. They're going to go with the hot hand. And you could see, you know, if Connor Hellebuck gets in there and the Jets play as they did last night, keep things, you know, fairly clean, and Connor Hellebuck plays well, let's say the Jets come out of Vancouver with a 4-2 win. Bet your ass he's starting against Carolina.
Yeah, if Connor Hellebuck, I mean, that's the other way. Do you go, hey, we want back-to-back wins here, we'll wrap up the road trip, and Steve, the game on Saturday is yours? Like, there's so many ways this could go, and we just don't know what they're thinking. Mm-hmm. Doing this. This is The Big Show, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. The Winnipeg Jets get their first win of the regular season, a 5-2 victory over the Edmonton Oilers. Mark Scheifele with his third goal in 3 games opened it up. Dmitry Kulikov had his first goal of the year, and then it was the Nick Ehlers show. 3 unanswered when the game was tied 2-2. A hat trick for Nick Ehlers. 4 points in the game. Just stepping to the forefront, and a lot of guys, I thought, played well in this one.
Yeah, and you know, I had it in my notes in watching that game, the other night here with the Jets on against Calgary Saturday. I thought that Ehlers, Wheeler and Scheifele, they were out there busting their ass pretty good, I thought, in that game as well. Maybe not, you know, as much production as last night here, but That line was really motoring around pretty well, and real nice puck movement and all the rest of it. And I thought it really intriguing or interesting here that Paul Maurice, late in the game, I suppose, in an important penalty kill, when he put out Scheifele and Wheeler, like to see that a little bit earlier on, have that level of emphasis on the penalty kill throughout the game. And I just kind of, there's so much movement with that right now, late in game, seeing him put out different guys and stuff. I wonder ultimately where that ends up. But that line really looked good and absolutely in tune last night. And that wrist shot by Ehlers, man, I've watched that 20 times. That was just a thing of beauty.
Yeah, I mean, they were the reason they won the game, was how dominant they were offensively. And you know, maybe the big thing when you talk about the penalty kill isn't necessarily how they looked. You only have 2 against you. And it's funny how a penalty kill can look pretty good in a game when you only have to kill it for 4 minutes. So that, hey, like maybe...
I didn't say it looked good. I said it was interesting seeing Paul Maurice go to them in a situation that he perceived as being fairly critical at a point in time of the game. I don't know why he wouldn't have that understanding all the way through.
I'm just saying your penalty kill is going to look a lot better when it's out there for essentially a blink of an eye, mm-hmm, against Edmonton. But it was funny, too, with Ehlers' first goal, skirting the line between disaster and then glory,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Because Dreisaitl picks him off there, but his hands were quick enough that he's able to just kind of poke the puck. Like, it was, you know, a 3-on-2 and a goal for the Jets was maybe millimeters away from being what looked like a 2-on-1 back the other way for Edmonton with some of their most dangerous players with the puck on their stick. So they made a bit of good fortune there, but then the skill level after that by Ehlers. I mean, my goodness.
Todd McClellan of the Oilers had his line blender out and wasn't very happy with his stars after the game. We'll talk about that and the Dustin Byfuglien injury when we come back on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Wericki with you in the opening hour of the big show. 22 minutes past. We'll get into the Bombers, the CFL, the Monday Nighter in the next segment. Major League Baseball playoffs coming up. And we'll hear from head coach Paul Maurice and some of the Jets. Mr. Connor Hellebuck spoke after the game. Wouldn't speak prior to the game about last night's victory, 5-2 for the Jets. Dustin Byfuglien doesn't play last night. Did not skate in the practice on Sunday and didn't take the morning skate either. Tucker Poolman makes his National Hockey League debut and does it in fine fashion. Comes out for the warm-up, and of course, no one else follows him out, so he takes a twirl by himself, as most rookies do. 19 shifts, 14 minutes and 30 seconds of ice time, almost at all even strength. Two shots on goal, one hit and one block shot for Tucker Poolman. First of all, if you're a rookie, you got to know that's coming. Oldest trick in the book, and yet you still got to do it. Lead us out, Rook. Oh, okay. But Tucker Poolman makes his National Hockey League debut with a fine performance in my mind.
Really comfortable. He just looked absolutely comfortable. Looked like that was his 80th game, not his first game. And he and Enstrom with the strongest of all the Jets from a possession standpoint last night. So super impressed with what Tucker Poolman did. And I'm not so sure that I believe the Dustin Byfuglien injured thing. I've seen it. I've just, you know, been around too many situations where certain things are presented to be easier, more easily consumed. And I can't buy it. So I hope he's not injured, Dustin Byfuglien, for his own sake.
Well, head coach Paul Maurice said after the game he missed the game with a lower body injury and he's considered day-to-day.
Yeah, and that means nothing to me, man. I'm just not buying it. I don't – maybe he is injured, but I just – to me, if you were ever going to – we talked about it yesterday about the possibility of trying to make the biggest impact on this team, and if you were to even possibly consider ever sitting down Buff, you know, if you were to do that and if they were to make him a healthy scratch, the firestorm – just the way the city and everybody else would deal with that would be considerably different than if they presented it as an injury. So I've just seen too much behind closed doors where things are kept from the public. So I don't care how many times people say it to me, I'm going to refuse to completely believe that as being the truth, and I'm just going to kind of leave it up in the air. But I'll say one thing for damn sure. The Winnipeg Jets looked much more like a structured group last night and didn't miss a beat whatsoever with Tucker Poolman in there.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a perfect defensive effort as well, having said that, because they did give up 39 shots on goal, and the shot chart wasn't totally flattering to the Jets. The Oilers were able to get some pretty good, not real close to the net, but
they
certainly
had
in the high
shot
slot.
Charts, right?
Yeah, like, so it wasn't like Byfuglien came out and, you know, all of a sudden the Jets were this sterling defensive team that Edmonton couldn't figure out. But having said that as well, there were no glaring mistakes made, and I was pleasantly surprised to see the team collapsing towards Hellebuck more, collapsing towards the net, and kind of giving him more of a safety valve. I thought they made a — I don't know if that's been the plan all season long, but it was certainly the plan last night, because they made a concerted effort to help out in and around the goaltender, and not just the defenseman, but, you know, two or three forwards as well. And Tucker Poolman, I don't know, kind of like Connor Hellebuck, what more could you have asked for him? He was outstanding. He only played 14 minutes, but he was still one of their better defensemen on the night. And it's not something he'll probably put on his mantle, but to lead the team in possession numbers in your first ever NHL game against a dangerous offensive club, he's been a lot better than most people probably expected. Mm-hmm. But for sure, for me, he's been way, way better than I thought he would be. He looks like an NHLer right off the bat.
And it brings in the question, what do you do with him? Like, if everybody's healthy and Dustin Byfuglien returns to the lineup, and not so much maybe even as in the six that are playing, although he probably deserves another look, what do you, like with the Ben Chiarot thing, like he's clearly to me the number seven guy. And what do you do with him? He's the guy that can go down.
To me,
it's one game, but he deserves another one. And I think he's ahead of Ben on the depth chart right now, from what I've seen.
Well, obviously he's ahead of Ben, or else Ben would have been called up, right? Put into the lineup. But to say he deserves another one, okay. So you're going to sit, or Buff is going to be injured another game?
No, like, I'm saying he's played well enough to get another one.
Well, if he gets another one, you got to take out a right-handed D, JT.
I know. So what do you do with him is the question.
I think Buff stays injured, in quotations, for another game.
I think Dustin Byfuglien actually is injured. But we'll talk about that more when we come back on the Royal Sports Power Hour. Up next, we'll shift over to some football. And don't forget, the Boss Pizza fan line is open at 9 o'clock for your thoughts on that as well. This is The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Not AutoCore present the Blue Bus. Before every Winnipeg Blue Bombers home game this season, we're taking W fans to Investors Group Field in our Not AutoCore VIP Blue Bus. We'll pick you up and drop you off the Not AutoCore VIP tent to tailgate before the game. Then after all the football action, take you back to wherever you started. Prize includes 6 tickets to an upcoming Blue Bombers home game and free transportation to and from. Enter now to win at TSN1290.ca. The Big Show, Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki. Much more on the Jets at the top of the hour. Delve into it on the Royal Sports Power Hour. And Brian Munns live from Vancouver as the team flew there last night after the 5-2 win over the Edmonton Oilers, their first win of the regular season. They're 1-2 now on the year and take on the Vancouver Canucks right here on TSN1290 on Thursday night. Before we get into the Bombers and yesterday's wrap-up of the CFL week, Monday Night Football last night, Mitch Trubisky makes his debut. The punter O'Donnell gets his first pass in the National Football League for a touchdown, but the Bears couldn't pull it out, 20-17. And to me, gentlemen, flipping back and forth to this and having PVR'd it and watched it a bit after the Jets game, Sam Bradford was hit a couple of times in this game, and everyone was talking about his knee injury and to get him out of the game, and he was eventually benched. I don't think he was well. Like, he looked like he was dazed and confused throughout that game. But once they pulled him, things turned around for the Vikings. Case Keenum and the Vikings pull it out 20-17 over Chicago.
Kind of wonder a little bit about Bradford. And I feel bad in doing this, and I this isn't politically correct for me to say at all, but I can't. This is the way I feel, so I have to say it. I wonder if he's soft.
Ooh, I think the opposite. I don't think he's soft. I think he's one of the toughest guys I've ever seen.
Really?
The guy's been beat up, and again, last night was beat up. And like, he shouldn't have been in the game anymore after he still was for an extended period of time. All the guy does is get destroyed and keeps playing.
I mean, he was getting smacked around a little bit, but nothing. I didn't think it was anything over the top or anything like that. And just the whole, even like when the knee thing first happened with him and the, like, I wonder a little bit. I can't help but wonder a little bit about him. And not just from what we're seeing here, but from years past a little bit and just everything that, like his approach, everything about the guy. He's never really blossomed into the cat that he was ever supposed to be as well.
No, I think the main thing you're learning about him is you can't trust him as your number one quarterback. It's just that simple. Can he play good? Yeah, yeah. When he's healthy and when he has time to throw, he's I don't know if top 10 necessarily, but he's a quarterback good enough to get a team into the playoffs in the NFL. But you can't trust him with his health at all. And even before he got banged up a little bit, he made some really crappy decisions. So the safety, I mean, that's something you would have seen Mitchell Trubisky make. Not say, like, Sam Bradford's been in the league long enough not to hold on to the ball 5 seconds into the end zone and then try and scramble when you can't move more than, 8 seconds in a 40 time.
And the whole, like, in the pocket and lay down before anybody touches, like, all that sort of stuff.
Well, yeah, like, I don't think he was healthy. Like, he was trying to protect that knee. Like, there was no tomorrow after he got sacked a couple
times.
Well,
and I found it interesting. RG3 was tweeting during the game, and near the end of the first half, he said, look, you got to get this guy out of the game to save himself. Because, like, and trust me, I would know, right? Like, you know, for a guy who watched himself lose his career to a knee injury, I guess he saw a lot of similarities in that from Bradford there. But I just, it's an interesting scenario for the Vikings here because everyone just kind of forgets. You still got Teddy Bridgewater, who at some point you're going to have to kind of see what he has. And I don't know how healthy he is and if he's
They've
good
wondered
to go
from day one
soon.
If he's ever going to be able to come back the way he was.
I talked to a guy at the start of the season in Minnesota. Actually, it was when I was filling in on the Gondola Pizza warm-up for Hustler, and he said that he should be ready by November. Like, all indications are that he's good. It's just they owed him so much money, that's why they cut him. But he's still around the Vikings, still practices with them and everything else. But he said, and this was, like I said, middle of August, that he said all indications are that he's had a good recovery, but whether he plays or not. I just thought that Sam Bradford should not have been playing. And it's not just because I thought he got banged up. I thought he looked a little woozy after one where he got tackled and his head fell back on the field. I just thought the way, like you said, his knee, he was trying to protect it. He wasn't at 100%. He wouldn't be the first guy to go at less than 100%. But once they took him out, the Fortunes, Case Keenum or whatever his name is.
Case Keenum's not that bad.
Yeah, he won him the game. Like, he came in and...
But in an overall, like, he's like 65 or so completion percentage for his time so far. 4 touchdowns, no interceptions. He's playing at a pretty good level.
This is the Big Show, TSN 1290, 39 minutes past the opening hour. Jets Oilers talk. We'll hear from head coach Paul Maurice at 7 o'clock today on the program. CFL Week 16 wrapped up yesterday in Montreal. The Edmonton Eskimos beat the Montreal Alouettes 42-24. And more question marks around Mike Riley, who... seemed to have an injury, did not finish the game, but after the game, Jason Moss said that he's banged up or didn't feel he was performing well, is what he said, and that's why he was pulled. And now the question marks revolve around whether he's actually injured or if that's true, and they're just trying to hide the fact that he is injured by saying, I didn't like the way he was performing.
Yeah, well, he wasn't all that nifty as far as performance goes, 13-29 while his time was there. And I'll tell you, one guy who deserved a lot better than what he got was Drew Willey. It was actually really nice seeing Drew Willey resemble or some semblance of the guy that was in Winnipeg with all kinds of promise. He just is starting to, you know, look composed back there, look somewhat confident. If you didn't, like, 42-24 is nowhere near what the game was. Edmonton scored 16 points in the fourth quarter to blow it wide open. But it was completely tight early on, and an unfortunate pick that went in and out of the hands of a receiver as he bounced onto the ground up into a Edmonton player's defensive mitts for a touchdown pretty much was the final nail in the coffin. But a real tight match. Drew Willey looked good, and Mike, you know dang well that Mike Riley's going to rebound and be fine and dandy.
Yeah, I was... It was the first time this season watching Drew Willey that he wasn't gun-shy, wasn't afraid of contact. He took some pretty solid hits, too. Armando Sewell got in there a couple of times, but he looked pretty legit. I was surprised. He performed pretty well. It at least makes the L's end of the season a little bit more interesting in a year that doesn't mean anything for them now.
It's pretty wild seeing John Bowman break down crying on the bench as well it was apparent they were going to lose, and just him coming to the reality of the end of their season, maybe the end of his career, all that sort of stuff.
And his receivers, Drew Willey's, didn't help him out much yesterday either. There was a couple key drops, but it was interesting to see how he played. So the Edmonton Eskimos win the game, and they are now, as I look it up here, Edmonton's now 8-6, tied with Saskatchewan, and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers return to the practice field today. Their 10-4 record hosting the 6-8 BC Lions, and all eyes will be on whether quarterback Matt Nichols is practicing or not.
And there's still work to be done here. Like, the Bombers can get caught still, in theory. So you need to go make something happen here. They got a couple of home games over the next 3 weeks against BC, and a kind of a strange scheduling quirk. And hopefully can take advantage of the situation with BC. But I'm really concerned the whole Matt Nichols thing, right? He's standing on the sideline, doesn't go in the second half, and we know about the nail and all the rest of it. But to me, if it was just a matter of pain, you can get shot up or pop pills or whatever to deal with superficial pain in that manner, right? Like just sort of surface pain. To me, they kept him out of the game because they were concerned about something more that had to do with it. And even yesterday, to not hear yet that he's okay to go sort of thing, just some concern. And my goodness, the impact that would have on this club if he's out for, I don't know, something like a month. I hope it doesn't happen, but let's hope that we find out today, too, that he's good to go.
Yeah, and if there is any concern that he's not 100%, you do not even contemplate playing him in this game.
Yeah.
Like, this is where the Bombers, and I know you want to clinch that home playoff game, but would you rather lose a week or would you rather lose your season? Is basically kind of the balance of what's going on. And we don't know how severe the injury is, but it's, for me, if there's any concern of a re-injury with him playing in that game, don't even think for one second about putting him in, even if it means you know that you're in tough against BC at home. You can't have that kind of a risk this close to the postseason.
Sorry, just looking this up with Vikings quarterback Teddy Bridgewater. He's on the physically unable to perform list, expected to come off after week six.
Yeah,
so
he
after
can't be
this
cut,
weekend.
Right? Like, when you're hurt, you can't be cut.
No.
So I was, yeah.
Okay. But there was a point where he was back practicing and wasn't able to, was healthy enough to be or something. But anyways, he's on the physically unable to perform list and he's expected back after week six and the Vikings hope to have him in the quarterback mix for the second half of the season. So I just wanted to clarify that. So who do you start if Matt Nichols?
They've come out and announced, I'm positive my ears heard that yesterday anyway, that if Matt Nichols can't go, that Dom Davis is going to start. So they have identified him, I guess, as being the second best in line. It's really perplexing to me. Dan LeFever, there's a whole bunch of similarities, in my opinion, between the journey of Dan LeFever and Matt Nichols. And I just thought it's perfect to come here as a real, true, legit backup. And even if it pushes Dom Davis down the line a little bit, or, you know, if you want to utilize these games to see where you sit with Dom Davis. But the thing to me is, there's no, who cares if Dom Davis goes out there and you know, has a fantastic couple of games here, if it happened, you trade him? I mean, they're not getting rid of Matt Nichols. Matt Nichols is 30 years old. He's got probably, you know, 4 or 5 solid years left in him. And you got Dan LeFever, who's 30 as well. So it's just the hand-in-hand sort of marriage of your starter and backup. If they have, you know, if Dan LeFever is the guy that I think he is, and he's, you know, mentally comfortable with the playbook and all the rest of it, like, to me, that whole situation is fantastic. So I wonder a little bit what they're hoping for or expecting here from Dom Davis.
Well, and I think if you really think Dom Davis is your second-best quarterback, you put him in the game. It's that simple for one, and two, I think you got to find out what you have in the kid. Like, you spent this long developing him. Here's your chance. If he does get the start, and just because he does get the start doesn't mean he gets to finish the game either. Mm-hmm. If there is struggle there as well, so yeah, Matt Nichols is the quarterback for the foreseeable future. But we've seen in the CFL all the time the importance of a backup quarterback. The Bombers have just been fortunate enough so far this season to not have to find out just how big of a deal that is. But we've seen in years past, and not just the Bombers, but other teams in the CFL as well, seasons can get torpedoed with your starting quarterback being hurt. And
really?
if Davis is a bit of a diamond in the rough, or whatever you want to term it here, you don't have to trade him necessarily, but that's a great insurance policy to have just in case worst-case scenario happens.
You know, I think if he was a diamond in the rough, that diamond already would have exposed itself in preseason and or practice sort of thing. Like, he's been there a long time, but the one thing that really bothers me, and it bothered me as that game was unfolding against Hamilton, was some of these games here where the Bombers have had a good considerable lead. You look at the week 12 or week 14 where they're most secure 20 plus point wins sort of thing, to not and see Matt Nichols play the whole game. Right, to not this is exactly why you put your second string quarterback in for the last 5 minutes, 2 minutes, series or two of games when they're well in hand, so that they can gain some of that experience and they're not quite as cold turkey as when they go into a situation like what Dom Davis had to parachute in last week. I keep thinking about that, and I wonder if this situation will sort of change going forward, the way Michael Shea handles games late when you're up by 20 and your starter wants to stay in, but you got to say, no, he needs snaps. Your backup needs snaps.
Yeah, it's interesting because, as you said, this is third season, and they obviously believe in him. And even when Kevin Glenn was brought in last year, Glenn was third on the depth chart. So,
which was goofy as hell.
So, like, is it's that age-old question. Like, you know, having not seen Dom Davis, I think LeFevre is your best chance to win. But I haven't seen him play other than that time, and I've seen him once in practice, like actively throwing. I've seen him at practice, but I haven't seen him. So it's real interesting that they obviously believe in him. It's his third year, and if he does get the start, very intriguing to see what he does.
The one thing he has on LeFevre for sure is the quick release. LeFevre's got a pretty extended throwing motion. I don't like in Paul Lapolis's kind of quick hit offense. Mm-hmm. I wonder if that gives him a bit of an edge, but.
Doesn't look to me like Dom Davis is at a place to make reads anywhere near at the speed that Matt Nichols will, right?
We'll take your calls on this and much more on the Boss Pizza Fan Line at 9 o'clock. We'll get back into the Jets and the Oilers at 7 o'clock, top of the hour. Up next, we'll delve into the Major League Baseball playoffs and if a guy should actually wear a Speedo under his uniform. That's next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290, Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you, and the LA Dodgers are moving on after a 3-1 win in Arizona. Cody Bellinger grew up in the city, went to high school nearby the Diamondbacks Park, hit a two-run bomb and a great diving catch into his dugout to help seal the victory, and the Houston Astros are moving on after a dramatic win over the Boston Red Sox. Yesterday afternoon, I was on the edge of my seat worrying, panicking, but they move on. And Josh Reddick, who basically caught a home run ball and then went off his glove, didn't catch it, could have caught it, went off his glove for a three-run bomb in a game three of this series, allowing those were the 8th, 9th, and 10th runs for the Astros, gets a great go-ahead RBI single late in the game, and then is shown dancing in champagne in an American flag Speedo in the locker room after to celebrate. Your thoughts on any of this?
Well, the first thing I thought of was with all the flag talk, right? Like
that's how you respect the flag, man.
Yeah, right. So that's the first thing I thought of. And then the whole Speedo thing, well, that's another discussion, I suppose. You can remove the design on the fabric and essentially a no-no regardless of what you're doing, right?
Hey, look good, feel good, play good. live by that tenet from Deion Sanders. And that's why I'm going to assume that's the main reason why the Dodgers are in the NLCS.
Probably the best news for the Astros yesterday, along with winning the series and moving on to the AL Championship Series, is the fact that the Yankees staved off elimination again yesterday. They beat the Cleveland Indians 7-3 and will force a fifth and deciding game back in Cleveland on Thursday. And it'll be interesting to see who comes through there. Who do you have in Game 5 between Cleveland?
Well, I'm full go cheering pinstripes all the way. I thought the game yesterday was all kinds of fun to watch. The judge steps up and knocks one. You know, having a tough series, but makes a statement there and is able to come up with a big hit. It was a lot of fun to watch. And this is if you're a fan of the Yankees, this is all you could really hope for, right? Get it to Game 5 and just see what happens.
Yeah, I'm still kind of rooting for Cleveland. I like the dominant season that they put together, but I want to ask you, because I was blown away by this when it happened, but Verlander going into relief there.
I didn't like it at all.
Yeah.
I did not like it at all. If you're facing elimination like the Red Sox and bringing in Chris Sale, I get it. But he's your potential game five. Well, he would be your game five starter. You're going to blow some innings here. I mean, it's really easy to look in hindsight. If Morton gives up a two-run bomb, you're questioning yourself for not bringing him in when he's there. But when he comes in and gives up a two-run bomb, it's obviously the wrong decision. But you never know until it happens. But then Verlander settled down and got him some key outs, did some innings. But I don't like that. If you're the Red Sox facing elimination, I understand it and I do it. If you're not facing elimination and have another game, I don't make that move. I either stay with Morton or I bring somebody else in. What do you guys do?
Well, to me, you're saying if you're facing elimination, if you want to try and end the series and win it, I understand the move completely.
I didn't like it at all.
But if you're up a game, you have an extra card to play. If you're not up a game and facing them, you don't have an extra card to play.
Yeah, but I don't want to visit that card. I don't want to, if we got a chance to seal the deal and get out of Dodge with a series win, then I'm going to be aggressive.
I don't like putting a pitcher into a situation he's not comfortable and accustomed to. And that was what that was there for Justin Verlander.
You think he wasn't comfortable or just not accustomed to it? Say you wouldn't do it if he wasn't comfortable.
Well, he gave up a two-run bomb.
But and to who? The first batter.
The first batter. Right? I don't think he was comfortable.
That to me was why he – I don't like that situation unless your back is up against the wall. Your trump card is you have one of the best pitchers of the past 10, 15 years ready to go at home in game five.
I have another baseball take to ask you guys about, and we'll do that as we get back into the Jets next on the Royal Sports Power Hour and the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
The iHeartRadio app is where you stream TSN 1290 and hundreds of other radio and digital stations. Check out the Perfect 4 menu to customize your listening experience. Your music, your station's always free on the iHeartRadio app. Jim Tolt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, and the Royal Sports Power Hour on the Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Brian Munns, Jets analyst, will join us live from Vancouver to discuss last night's 5-2 win over the Edmonton Oilers for the Winnipeg Jets, their first victory of the season. They'll take on the Canucks on Thursday. We'll qualify somebody in our Hockey Nights in Vegas. Give away two more grand prizes to go. And, of course, your NHL news and notes. Last night, the Jets beat the Oilers 5-2, as we discussed. This segment is brought to you by Olympic Buildings. And here is head coach Paul Maurice of the Winnipeg Jets on the game last night.
We had some real good goaltending. We had a number of our defensemen difficult singling them out because I thought they were all pretty good, but Trouba and Morrissey, real dominant, like Cooley's game. And up front, Nicky scores the three, but that's the most dominant Shifley and Wheeler have been. Up going both ways. I mean, those are two periods in terms of all the things you want out of your leadership. Those are the two best periods I think I've seen Mark Scheifele play. Just driving the game. Smart and hard. Penalty kill settled out after the first one. Some nerves, but they got it done and scored one to finish it off on the power play.
I thought Kulikov was the wonkiest part of the D for the Jets. He really roams. Holy cow. I was giggling watching Myers trying to adjust to Kulikov's positioning in the defensive zone for coverage. Like Kulikov, the whole left-right part of Kulikov is amazing to me, where he's just like wherever he's ending up, he kind of gets caught and lost. And you see Myers reading him and shifting and adjusting and such. I'm a little surprised here. I think Paul Maurice speaks highly there of what Kulikov did, and a nice goal for sure, but just some wonky moments. And then I also thought that, and I'm surprised to see the level of struggle from a possession standpoint of Tanev, Kopp, and Dano. I thought Dano had a pretty nifty game, made a couple of nice defensive plays. It was a physical presence out there as well.
Yeah, I mean, Kulikov had some nice moments offensively for sure. The goal and then the play prior to that on the first goal from Scheifele, you know, able to keep the puck in along the boards there and then a bit of good fortune just kind of throwing it to the net, but Scheifele gets it. But
he also caused that turnover, right, that led to a goal in the offensive zone.
Yeah, but he showed some good offensive instinct. It was an improvement over what we had seen from two games from him at the very least, but Trouba Morrissey getting the lion's share of minutes, I think, was a good sign to see. And you know, outside of McDavid, I guess what he does to everybody, you know, burned Truba pretty good on one play, but Morrissey, for the most part, played him about as good
only
as you could ask.
Lost one battle to him, ended up in the back of the net, but pretty much only lost one battle to him, huh?
Yeah, and that's, I mean,
that's a win.
You kind of take that in a way against McDavid and Draisaitl whenever they're paired together, but at the very least, they kept McDavid somewhat in check, didn't let him burn by him like, you know, the Flames did in game one, where it was breakaway after breakaway. They, you know, you kind of just try and contain him, right? Don't hold him pointless, but if he can limit it to one, then the damage isn't that bad. And the Jets, you know, to their credit at least, were able to limit the damage.
Yeah, I thought Kulikov was his best game as a Jet. I did agree with you on the turnover there when he pinched in and caused that on the Nugent Hopkins goal. But I thought overall he played his best game, was more confident and more physical. I didn't notice Marco Dano at all last night. Like, I was looking for him to see if he could – I didn't – what did you like from his game?
I just thought he was physical. I thought he was physical and made a couple nice defensive plays, specifically in the D zone with support.
I thought the whole team played better defensively. Like, even that number one line of Scheifele, Wheeler, and Ehlers put up a ton of points, but I thought their back check was way good and a lot more structure as well as the night wore on for that. Connor Hellebuyck made 37 saves, got his not only his first victory of the season, his first victory against the Oilers, and the team's first victory as well. Here's head coach Paul Maurice on Connor Hellebuyck's play.
Really made some good saves. What I thought for Connor that was so important, he looked calm when he didn't have control of the puck, but it was 2 or 3 feet around him. He was square to it. I think he's just physically stronger than he was last year, and he's able to hold his body position in some of those scrums. And then he worked hard to find the pucks through traffic. They got an awful lot through traffic, especially in the first period. And he had his glove going, and he found them.
He looked good, no question about it. Also, what was in front of him was considerably cleaner than what Mason had been dealing with the last couple of weeks. And I can't believe when I listen to the national narrative or really the NHL narrative, when people are, you know, talking about the games and just coming out of the gate and saying what a rough start and how poorly Steve Mason is playing. It's like you guys need to watch games before you comment on stuff like that. I think Steve Mason would have probably had a very similar game to Connor Hellebuyck last night. I'm really intrigued as to who starts Thursday night. We're going to get a pretty good understanding of how committed or you know, just or how strongly this organization considers Steve Mason to be the starter. To me, you take Hellebuyck out of the mix here against Vancouver if you're really committed to Steve Mason being the starter. If it's more of a competition or more of a little bit of a platoon, or if you're willing to run with the hot hand here, then you're going to see Connor Hellebuyck again.
Yeah, and look, a big part of goaltending is confidence all the time. And it was, I think, a big step for Hellebuyck to get into the first game and have a real strong outing. I thought he was great. And I don't think you couldn't have asked any more out of him. You know, the two goals he gave up were both good goals by the Oilers, both nice plays. And I think shots you don't really expect your goalie to make a save on, but he made a couple of nice ones. I thought his best save of the night was that deflection play in the high slot area, and he showed some pretty solid athleticism, which is kind of always going to be the big concern with him, is if he's athletic enough, able to move post to post. Mm-hmm. You know, strongly, and I thought, I don't know if it was improved from last year necessarily, but it was a hell of a save at least, and I thought it was exactly what the Jets needed. Not that Mason played poorly in the first two games, but Hellebuyck was just real, real solid throughout the game.
I agree. It was 2-0 in the second period, and then within 40 seconds it was 2-2. Paul Maurice called the timeout, and they got a goal before the period ended. Here's head coach Paul Maurice on what he said during the timeout.
Well, just our last 2 days, it was an opportunity for us to handle it, and we did. The result of it is, and Nicky scores a really big goal, but the two shifts are right, you know, just relaxed and simple and hard, something like that.
Timing of the timeout?
Yeah, and brought to my attention was just how dialed in the guys were in listening, put it back and watching how engaged they were with the message being sent at that point in time, and definitely engaged and tuned in pretty sharply to what Paul Maurice, the message he was delivering there.
And it didn't look angry. It didn't look like, it looked very positive. It wasn't even like, it didn't look panicky, like settle down. It looked like, exactly what he said to me, it looked like he was saying, "What we just talked about this for the past 2 days, blah, 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 blah."
Yeah, and you know, and he touched on it there too, but I know the result is the Ehlers goal a few minutes later, but the couple of shifts after that,
yeah,
real solid. No panic whatsoever. They kind of got back to what they were doing well in the first period. So at the very least, they were able to learn from their early season mistake in Calgary. And you got to give Paul Maurice credit. Like, if you're going to get on him for things he's done wrong, and I think he's had his struggles coaching this season already, but that was the perfect time, perfect opportunity to call a timeout and just kind of, you know, calm any sort of worries and doubts the team might have had on the bench there.
We're delving into head coach Paul Maurice's post-game comments after a 5-2 win over the Edmonton Oilers last night here on the Big Show, TSN 1290. We talked about Tucker Poolman. Here's what head coach Paul Maurice had to say about the rookie defenseman's first game in the National Hockey League and what he did right.
All the simple things well and easy settled into the game. He's just a smart, smart defenseman with the puck. You know, the two offensive zone faceoffs at the end of the game. He doesn't get them blocked. He rips them back on the strong side boards. He's just a smart man.
He's a smart man.
He looked well, but man, he looked like that was his 80th game. You know, not his first. He just looked absolutely, completely comfortable there. I wonder when you have a game. To me, this whole managing the Buff situation, when you have a game like that where it's such a jump to maintaining structure here, I wonder if Dustin Byfuglien will be injured or delayed at all come Thursday as well.
Well, speaking of that, here's head coach Paul Maurice on Dustin Byfuglien's injury.
No, he never warmed up. Like, so he came in the morning skate, we tried to loosen it up, and it didn't quite warm up, and he came in. So they come in for an hour before. We do a bunch of things to these injuries. If he doesn't feel right, we didn't put him on the ice. It's day-to-day lower body, yeah.
Huh. I can't help but wonder a little bit about that. And I've just been in too many situations behind closed doors where what's being given to the public is what will be most easily digested by the public. So if he is injured, I hope he heals quickly. But I just can't sit here. When I heard that news last night, I can't accept it at a surface level without questioning whether it was a healthy scratch or an injury. No matter how it's being presented to me, I've just seen too much, man.
The timing was certainly convenient for the Jets. I guess we got to take them at their word, but it was peculiar, at least, I thought.
Yep.
Look, I took some tweets on this last night. I'm just going to say this. The Winnipeg Jets are a better team with Dustin Byfuglien. The whole idea that they don't need him anymore is ridiculous to me.
I don't necessarily agree with you. When you're talking about, you know, concerns of, and I've said this for years here, so long as Dustin Byfuglien is a part of the group, his ups and downs will forever be entrenched in their DNA.
Fair enough. I think he adds more than he's a dynamic player. They need him on the power play.
They don't need him on the power play. No, they don't.
How did it look last night?
They don't need him on the power play, man. What does he do on the power play that
he puts up 50 points a year, and most of them are on the power play.
Jacob Trouba, they've got 2-3 guys that can easily fill that role, I think, defensively from what he does on the power play and dishing the puck off for the most part.
Do you honestly think the Winnipeg Jets don't need Dustin Byfuglien this year?
You're damn right, I think that. I don't think they've needed
Who's
him for the last couple
his place?
Of years. They would be fine and dandy with what they put on the ice last night.
So Tucker Poolman's taking over for Dustin Byfuglien now?
I've said this for a long time, Jim. I believe that the approach of Dustin Byfuglien, the mentality of Dustin Byfuglien, I think there is the roller coaster ride involved when everybody says, you know, if there's always an if with Dustin Byfuglien, you know, which guy you're getting. The guy we saw in those first two games that's wandering to the degree that he is, and sort of the mentality and the approach, that has a ultimate negative impact that holds back a young group that's capable of great things. Guys that are tuned in to the degree, and just as an example, when you're tuned in to the degree and razor sharp and dedicated like a Mark Scheifele and or a Blake Wheeler, to me, like, there's a certain mentality of investing everything you got to be the very best that you can be. And I've questioned the whole Dustin Byfuglien thing, the ups and downs of it. I question to what degree that exists in the man. And I think it affects the team at times as much as they love him. And I love watching him. But I think the team becomes more sound and more tuned in if and when they move on from Dustin Byfuglien.
I don't disagree with the first two games. I think he wasn't very good. I think that he can be better, and I think the team needs him.
I agree with your point earlier, Jim, where over time the good outweighs the bad when you kind of look at the sum of things. Where he's a net positive on the team. There's no, in terms of results at least, in terms of outscoring your opposition, which is, you know, that is the name of hockey, right? It's not win 2-1, it's win the game by scoring more goals than the other team. But he can't play like he did in the first two games. That level of play is unacceptable by any defenseman at any level in hockey. And it was what he did those first two games was worthy of a sit down. You cannot play hockey like that. And it's not just, you know, the Bennett goal or the Versteeg goal, the third one where, you know, Armia makes the turnover and Buff just kind of glides in. There was a number of plays you could highlight throughout that game against Calgary alone where you cannot have one of your leaders play hockey like that.
I agree with what you're saying.
I don't think I've ever been on a team where you have to compel the give an F factor out of an athlete. To me, any team I've ever seen or been associated with is better off without that individual, regardless of how talented they are. When you have to compel that level of buy-in and attention to detail, you've got a tragic flaw within the team.
I think there's a difference between care and buy-in and playing well. I think he doesn't play well. I think he does things that we just talked about sometimes, but to say that he doesn't care, I think, is a big misdemeanor.
Really? So yeah, you're going to watch misnomer. That game, the fifth goal against Calgary, when he jumps up to the blue line,
the one
floats back.
You know who was worse than Dustin Byfuglien in the first two games? You know who was worse than Dustin Byfuglien?
I'm asking about that specific situation, Jim. You can watch that and tell me that's a guy that cares at that moment?
Jacob Trouba was worse than Dustin Byfuglien in the first two games. You got to be kidding
me.
Look,
man, yeah, I am telling you of a specific situation and challenging you to tell me that that player cares in that moment and he's given you everything that he's got.
I'm not arguing in that moment.
You can show me.
I'm not arguing in that moment, but who wants to be here more, Jacob Trouba or Dustin Byfuglien?
In the city of Winnipeg? I don't know the answer to that, Jim, but that you're twisting this conversation. I'll give you every single game Jacob Trouba's ever played as a Winnipeg Jet, and you find me anything that even approaches what you saw from Dustin Byfuglien on the fifth goal against Calgary. You're not going to find anything that
Jacob
even comes
Trouba
close to that
in the first two games of the season.
Horse crap. Well, fine. Hey, find me the sequence that shows me a guy that's not as invested as what we saw in that fifth
the
goal.
The dumb
from
penalty
Byfuglien.
And being on the ice for four goals against.
You're going to generalize being on the goal for...
Well, look, they both took dumb penalties against the Leafs. And
not,
Jacob Trouba was on
question.
The ice for more goals against than Byfuglien was.
You're not getting what I'm saying, man.
I am getting what
well,
you're saying,
you
Troy.
You don't
like the fact that he
game.
Wheels around against Calgary, turns over the puck. You don't like the fact that he chased a Leaf to the blue line, took a penalty. I don't like that either.
I'm saying you got a guy in the defensive zone floating up and down from the blue line and turning around, gliding back instead of playing at a hard level, being tuned in at a certain level. So long as Dustin Byfuglien is here, that will haunt the Winnipeg Jets, and they're better off without him.
I don't disagree that he plays that way. I just think that they need him more than they can get rid of him, especially this season. But we'll continue the conversation, we'll take a break, and we'll qualify our next qualifier for Hockey Nights in Vegas on The Big Show next, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
TSN 1290 and redtag.ca present Hockey Nights in Vegas as we're sending five lucky listeners and their guests to Las Vegas this November, where they'll see the Winnipeg Jets take on the Vegas Golden Knights Friday, November the 10th at T-Mobile Arena. 12th caller through, 780-1290. Once qualified, grand prize winners get return airfare to and from Las Vegas, free parking at Winnipeg Richardson International Airport, courtesy of Park and Fly, two hockey tickets, Jets versus Golden Knights, November 10th at T-Mobile Arena, four nights accommodations on the Strip, and $1,290 in cash to help cover a few extras during your stay. Listen for your chance to qualify and win weekdays at 7:15 a.m., 8:15 a.m., 12:15 p.m., and 5:15 p.m., or watch for bonus chances to qualify online. Winners will be announced Monday mornings on The Big Show. Next grand prize announcement coming up October 23rd, and then again our final one on November 6th. For more information, check out tsn1290.ca. Hockey Nights in Vegas, presented by redtag.ca, where Canada shops for great travel deals, and us here at TSN 1290. We'll do it again at 8:15 here on The Big Show, 12:15 with Kevin Hrushevsky and the Don Vito Roundtable, and 5:15 with the Afternoon Ride with Hustler and Mr. Rick Ralph weekdays. And congratulations once again to Sharon, who's taken her husband back to Sin City, our grand prize winner yesterday.
Yes, that's awesome stuff. She was so giddy, too, listening to you read out all that she was getting. It was just absolutely fantastic.
Congratulations to our first three grand prize winners, including Sharon, our latest. And we have two more to go once again, just for qualifying today. And each time you qualify weekdays at 7:15, 8:15, 12:15, and 5:15, we will give you a Jets Gear gift card. We'll get to our qualifier next. And Brian Munns, live from Vancouver on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. And congratulations to Tara Kobet, who is our latest qualifier in Hockey Nights in Vegas. TSN 1290 and RedTag.ca present Hockey Nights in Vegas. Return airfare to and from Sin City. Free parking at the Winnipeg Richardson International Airport, courtesy of Park and Fly. Two hockey tickets to the Jets and Golden Knights November 10th. And four nights accommodation on the Strip plus $1,290 cash. Tara, you are in. And just for doing so, you get a Jets Gear gift card. We'll do it again at 8:15 today. And, of course, we will have the Boss Pizza fan line open at 9 o'clock as well. NHL news and notes still to come. This segment is brought to you by, or is a presentation of Olympic Buildings. Buildings, straightforward or complex, it's what they do best. Tour their projects at olympic-buildings.ca. Jim Tulth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki with you on the Royal Sports Power Hour on The Big Show, 34 minutes past the hour, and we bring in Mr. Brian Munns, Jets analyst here on TSN 1290, live from Vancouver to talk about the Jets and last night's win. Good morning, Brian. Did the plane go a little faster, being there's a little weight off the team now?
Yeah, it was a pleasant plane ride. There's no question about it. And you know what? The guy should have felt good about himself. From Connor Hellebuyck in goal to the 18 skaters to head coach Paul Maurice, who called the timeout at the perfect time last night. There was a lot of things that the club's able to enjoy, and it's their first win in a couple of years against this Edmonton Oilers team as well. And that might be the biggest thing for me, that a team that a lot of people expect to be very, very good this year in the Western Conference, that the Jets were able to build some confidence in their first of three meetings. So all in all, it was a good game, too, of the three-game road trip.
Really taken last night by how comfortable Tucker Pullman looked out there.
Sure did, Troy. Was really, really good and was happy for him. You know, he played six preseason games and was given every opportunity to show the organization what he could do, and was able to take full advantage of it. And I think the one thing that I liked about Pullman the most last night is he didn't try and do too much. There were points in the game where you had to make sure and take a look that he was on the ice. And for Charlie Huddy to throw him and Toby Enstrom together, pretty good guy to watch over Tucker's shoulder. And all in all, it was a good night. You know, had a couple shots on goal and a couple blocked shots. And again, did nothing really fancy, but was very effective as one of those six guys. So special night for him, and I think being 24 years old and a little bit older as well probably helped his game. That you know, he didn't seem too nervous on the outside, but he told me after on the post game show there were some nerves early on in the game, but didn't really look like it.
What's the latest on Dustin Byfuglien, and is there a chance Tucker Pullman gets his second game of his career on Thursday?
You know, Jim, in all honesty, we won't know until tomorrow. It's a day off for the team here today, so we won't really see anybody around the organization. For Buff right now, you know, we had an idea yesterday morning skate when he didn't go that Tucker may have a chance to play. And right now it's just lower body, whether it's early in the season right now and if he's tweaked something a little bit or maybe if he's pushed it a little bit. coming out of the gate here in the first couple of games, because he has logged a considerable amount of minutes so far. So hopefully it's nothing too serious, but the one word that we've used a lot with this club kind of since July now is depth. And to have Bufflin go down and to have Poolman come in and play the way he did, and also Ben Chiarot still in the wings as well here right now. Let's not forget about that. So the team has some pretty serviceable guys that are able to jump into the fold here and log some minutes, and we saw it last night.
Who would you start in net Thursday night against Vancouver, man?
We're going there already, are we?
Yeah.
You know what? I'd probably go back to Steve. But in saying that, Connor deserves to play again. He was really, really good last night. You take a look at the 22 shots that the Oilers had in the first period. There was a barrage there for a while where you were kind of waiting for something to happen for Edmonton. But he was big. He was at the top of his crease. He wasn't flopping around his net at all like we've seen in years past. I really liked the game that Connor played last night. And you know what? He deserves a game again in the very near future. So whether it's the Vancouver game coming up here on Thursday, whether it's the game back at home against Carolina or Columbus, I think that he showed both Paul Maurice and Wade Flaherty last night that he's ready to go at a moment's notice. And he deserves a lot of credit, because there was a lot of pressure on him going into the game last night. And to be honest with you, he kind of brought it on himself, because he declined a media conversation yesterday morning. And there were some people in Edmonton that kind of got ruffled by that, just based on the fact that Connor was 0-4 against the Oilers in his career. He's right now considered a number two netminder, and he brought a lot of pressure on himself yesterday. So he played a really good game, and you know what? It was a big win for Connor Hellebuyck last night.
Look, I'm all for speaking to the media. Obviously, I'm in the media, and I don't like it when guys don't. But this isn't new for a goalie to do this on game days.
No, but the wave is kind of starting to come back a little bit, Jim, that more and more of them are. And it's probably highlighted more because Steve Mason is so open and has been, and it's kind of been the talk around the organization since he signed the deal. But as some of us were kind of giggling last night as the game wore on, well, I guess Connor's not going to talk on game day mornings if he plays like this. And I'm sure if you ask Paul Maurice about it now, if he gets a goalie's performance like that, he probably never has to talk again.
Munzee, Josh Morrissey was on the ice often last night when 97 was out there. And but that one puck battle behind the net that he lost, Josh Morrissey kept him incredibly well contained.
I agree. I thought he did a really good job last night. And I was kind of curious to see how it would play out. And I talked to a few of the guys in the morning and expected to see maybe a little bit more of Tyler Myers against Connor McDavid last night, but Josh did a really good job of it, and Paulie and I were talking about it on the show, especially in the first period. There were those few opportunities where he was given a chance to rush in, and now he was doing it more down the left side than the right side that he had success against Calgary and TJ Brody on that goal that you know, we're still seeing right now. But the biggest thing that Josh did is he played the puck. He didn't worry about the man. You know, he kept a pretty good eye on the logo and just kind of stayed focused on the task at hand and didn't allow himself to get beat. You mentioned the one goal that did go in, and that was really the only minus that Josh had in his game last night, but had three blocked shots as well in front of his goalie, and I thought that was a really good pairing again. And you know what? I think we're going to see a lot of flopping around with the defensemen, kind of see which works, which doesn't. If it's not going, you know, Charlie Huddy's not afraid to switch it up a little bit, but yeah, it was a good night for Josh, and I think a bit of a redemption game as well for Jacob Trouba, who knew that he didn't play well against Toronto and got a little bit better against Calgary, and then was probably one of the better games that we've seen him play as of late last night.
Just along those lines, Brian, you mentioned a lot of pressure on Connor Hellebuyck. How much pressure was on this team last night just to get a win, especially facing a dynamic Oilers team?
Yeah, it really was, because I think if you lose last night, you're really rattled mentally at 0-3, and then you've got a Canuck club that all of a sudden everybody thinks you should win against, just based on kind of the early season expectation for this team on the West Coast. But then you look at the fact that they beat the Oilers two nights ago themselves. So all of a sudden, if you come home 0-4 on this road trip, you know, the world is sitting atop of your shoulders right now. So it was good. You know, you could see a bit of a sense of relief from the players last night, but I look at the fact that, you know, they got the goalie's performance. We talked about Morrissey. We talked about Trouba. We throw Tyler Myers in there. Tucker Poolman gets his first game. But as Todd McClellan put it last night, the big boys for Winnipeg outplayed his top players. And for Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler and Nikolai Ehlers to combine for 10 points, be as dominant as they were at both ends of the ice, you know, not just the scoring side of it. Coach mentioned after the game last night that that might be the best game that he's ever seen Mark Scheifele play in his defensive half of the ice. So Winnipeg's top players really elevated their game. Scheifele said at the beginning of the year that he wants to be as good as Connor and Sidney Crosby and other players like that, and I thought really rose to the occasion in last night's game and should be pretty proud of himself.
Your thoughts on the situation with Joel Armia right now?
You know what? I feel for Joel because he tries. You know, he's one of those really quiet guys that doesn't say a lot, and you kind of have to strike up the conversation with him, and then he'll engage you. But, you know, he's only coming into his fourth NHL season right now. He's got all the skill in the world. We saw him last year with those four shorthanded goals, but never hurts early on to take a look. And the one thing we've seen that I've really noticed from Paul Maurice, and especially, I guess, after the last couple of losses, is if he doesn't like something, he's going to make a change. He hasn't been patient and just kind of said, let's stick with it for a while and see how this thing plays out. And Joel's game just hasn't been there. Just he hasn't been able to skate as much as we've noticed in the last couple of years since he came over in that trade from Buffalo. So a night or two in the press box to kind of watch, do some evaluation. You know, he'll watch a lot of video here. Todd Woodcroft is their skills coach, and he was out there with him yesterday after the morning skate, working a little bit longer with Ben Chiarot. So I think for Joel, it's just part of the maturation process. He'll be fine, but again, they had some players. Brandon Tanev came in, I thought, did a really good job on that line with Sean Mathias and Adam Lowry last night, and is using his speed, and he's a guy that can skate. So when you look at one guy that maybe hasn't been able to get his feet going, you throw another guy in there right now that has, and it worked out pretty good for the team last night.
Brian Munns, Jets analyst on TSN 1290, joining us on the big show this morning, 44 minutes past the hour, live from Vancouver, where it's real early, so we appreciate him getting up and doing this. A lot of talk on this show and around the city about Nick Ehlers and how many points and how big is he going to get. He's got the extension now. But you see that game last night, and there's still a lot of dynamic ceiling with this guy.
Biggest thing that I continue to be surprised by Nick is how fast he is. Just he takes those two strides, and he can do it on a corner. He's not a straight-line guy. He can accelerate when he's making that turn and doesn't glide, keeps his feet pumping, and he's pretty good on his edges right now. And, yeah, they played well. I think Mark Scheifele deserves so much credit, and Blake Wheeler for the game that Nick had in getting his second career hat trick last night. Those three just gelled. You know, it was a night where you can say that, yeah, they were on, but to have eight shots on goal, I think he attempted 12 himself in the offensive zone last night. He was flying, and he felt good about himself. And I know you guys were watching the game, and you could see the smile on his face. He was having fun in last night's game, and he's one of those guys that if you look at an Edmonton-Winnipeg game, you're not going to talk about because you're talking about McDavid and you're talking about Draisaitl and you're talking about, you know, Patrick Laine, who was held off the score sheet last night, and Mark Scheifele. And I think Nikolai Ehlers kind of liked that challenge last night of flying under the radar. And at the end of the night, he was able to say, hey, don't forget about me either.
One final note, Brian, on the Oilers game is Todd McClellan wasn't very happy with not only his team but his stars.
Yeah, and it's been a couple of games now. You know, I was talking to a few people on the off day between the Calgary and the Edmonton game when both clubs practiced late afternoon, and there was a little bit of disdain that the fact that they would go into Vancouver and lose to the Canucks, like kind of what we talked about earlier on, is a lot of people don't expect this team out here to be very good, and it's kind of that free spot on the bingo card, and all of a sudden, to have them lose to Vancouver was kind of like, well, that doesn't happen to us. And there was even some arrogance, and I don't know if arrogance is the appropriate word, but it is, in the game last night. Some people were around the press box saying, how is this team beating the Oilers right now 2-0 after one? So there's some high expectation both on and off the ice in Edmonton that, you know, a lot of their players are probably going to go, but I think in Edmonton today, you know, Milan Lucic was really good with us on the pregame show yesterday, just talking about how to manage those expectations. And you're not going to win a Stanley Cup in October and kind of said all the right things for a guy that's won a cup in Boston. But it's not happy times right now. I know Todd wants a lot of his better players to be a little bit more consistent here as they get ready for Game 4 in a couple of days. And it won't be a lot of fun either, because you look at the calendar there and they don't play again until Saturday. And then they've got a game at home against Carolina on Tuesday. So Edmonton's got a down portion on their schedule here right now that is going to make for, I think, a lot of stories coming out of the Alberta Capitol here over the next few days.
Thanks for doing this, Brian. Appreciate it. Enjoy the day off, and we'll talk to you later this week.
Anytime, guys. Talk to you Friday.
Thanks, Munsey.
See you, Troy.
We'll take a break on the Big Show, and when we come back, your NHL news and notes are next on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
You wanted it back and we caved. TSN 1290 wants to better your basement with a host of cool add-ons. This time there are two caves to choose from, the Man Cave or the Mam Cave. Each cave includes a $500 men's or women's Burton Gear shopping spree from Alter Ego Sports, pizza night for 10, courtesy of Boston Pizza, two tickets to either the upcoming UFC Fight Night December 16th at Bell MTS Place, or two tickets to Shania Twain's Now Tour May 13th at Bell MTS Place. Both caves come with a Winnipeg Jets guys or girls night out, including two tickets to an upcoming 2017-18 home game at Bell MTS Place and a customized Winnipeg Jets hockey jersey puck party. And both include a rink water, nice rink, rink in a box, the industry standard for outdoor rink starter kits. You can select your cave online of choice, whichever one you wish, at tsn1290.ca. We'll randomly draw a winner of each grand prize package on Monday, October the 30th. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you on the Big Show, TSN 1290, NHL news and notes time, gentlemen. And the Calgary Flames used Joe Boo, or at least a doll of Joe Boo, from the movie Major League to exorcise some demons in Anaheim last night. They shut out the Anaheim Mighty Ducks 2-0 behind Mike Smith's performance in net and get their first win at the Honda Center since 2004.
Crazy. One of the most bizarre streaks in sports, really. And thankfully, it's done. It was just weird.
Almost harder to do. Over a decade, they haven't been able to win
in the division too. It's not like they're you know, it's not like the Jets
thing,
against Columbus, right?
Yeah.
Right? Like it's your 3-4 times a year almost.
Incredible. The Toronto Maple Leafs continued to roll. They were down to the Chicago Blackhawks, went to overtime, and Austin Matthews ended up winning it last night. This team is firing on all cylinders offensively. They do have some defensive issues, giving up a lot of goals as well. But are the Leafs potentially better than you thought they were?
Yep. And although this is a game that goes into overtime, scoring chances 37-12 for Toronto in the game. Like, absolute domination. Toronto, that their top nine is damn good. Like, damn good.
19 goals in three games.
Might be the best top nine in the league.
Might be.
You know, if you're accounting for depth and all that sort of thing, I picked them to win the division, so they're kind of playing how I thought they would. They're a legit team. It's not any more of this kind of cute, oh hey, the Leafs are fun again and they've got some good players. No, this is a scary outfit they're putting together.
If you hate the Maple Leafs, you're in for a tough few years here.
Well, I saw Jay and Dan last night talking, and they literally said that, you know, it's going to be insufferable, but at least they're good. At least it's actually worth talking about. But they admitted they'd be covering it this much even if they weren't good. So, Peter Forsberg on a radio station back home says the Colorado Avalanche should bench Matt Duchene and then trade him.
Yeah, and I guess like bench him to make sure he doesn't get injured or to focus on moving him, sort of thing. Yeah, I mean, you know, who doesn't have an opinion on this situation at this point, Tom? You got to tip your hat to Matt Duchene of just basically putting blinders on and playing and letting the chips. You know, he has zero control here, right? So you just play and whatever the situation. But Joe Sakic is, Has there been a situation that has been more bumbled than this in anyone's memory in hockey? I mean, come on, man.
Yeah, I mean, well, hey, you could look over at Vegas and what's going on with some of the guys they have in the AHL right now as well that aren't
this
playing.
Year, though. Like, yeah. This is a
well, that's the other issue, right? Yeah, right? It's a three-year thing where you're just twisting this poor guy into the wind, and I get what Fopa's saying there, right? Like, just help him out. Like, do this for him at this point. He's being the good soldier here, and you're just kind of it's just unfair for an athlete to expect an athlete at least to perform with all of this swirling around him every single second here. But the Avs are 2-1 to start the year.
I do wonder about that a little bit, though. Like, you're getting paid a pile of money, and you're around guys that you like. As soon as you walk in that locker room, he's probably in a good place with guys you like and in your team. So I wonder how truly, like, you know, the difficulty of it, I wonder how much that exists, especially if he's a single guy. I don't know that he cares if he moves it from A to B or anything like that. And once you go into the comfy confines of that locker room, it's like a safe spot. So I do wonder. I think that's overstated or overplayed a little bit by the media and how difficult it is on him.
I disagree in this situation. I think if the rumors are out there, you're correct. Like, it's just rumors and around the trade deadline. I think this is a situation where obviously the guys like him, but just think of practice. And he's on the power play. And they're like, we need to do this and do that. And everybody's sitting there going, well, is he even going to be here tomorrow? Like, do we need to work on this? Do I need to build chemistry with this guy?
Well, the answers to all those questions are yes. If so long as that's your perspective and understanding, whether you're his teammate or Matt Duchene himself, you just operate as per normal going forward. As long as everyone's in the right mindset for that, then there's nothing to manage.
I know hockey players and athletes in general compartmentalize everything,
and
they're better than everyone, realistically. But it has to wear on you every single day going to work, knowing your employer doesn't want you there. You're not wanted here. Like, at some point, and look what happened last year. He was the Matt Duchene with Colorado last year is nowhere near the player he actually is.
You can't tell me when he leaves a practice facility, then they go for lunch or they don't go for lunch, and they're like, see you tomorrow. Will you?
Maybe.
Like, well, you can't tell me that's not on their mind.
If it's a month or two old story, sure, but 3 years into this, you really think?
Yes.
I
think if it's a month or two, they don't focus on it as much. I think the fact that it is at the point where it is, that's weighing on everybody's mind.
I don't think so. I think at some point in time as an athlete, you'd become numb to this, and you just kind of – you would bury it so deep, and who cares, just let it happen or not. I think he and the entire team would grow tired of the conversation and debate.
If you're Matt Duchene, how comfortable are you right now?
I couldn't care less. Like, if I'm Matt Duchene, and now it depends. If he's got two kids at home with a wife, that's a different level of stress. If he's a single cat out there, I think he's fine and dandy. And he's good, like, playing almost angry with a chip on your shoulder, saying, fine, trade me. I'll go, you know, let's hope he maintains his pace of production and see what happens.
They are winning, though. But if they drop 5 in a row and this continues, That's when situations like this can really go haywire quickly.
They're in a playoff spot.
But you wonder, like, is Joe Sakic ever going to trade this guy?
Yeah.
Honestly, at this point, like, he had every chance for a year or two now.
Has the window closed, like, to get the best? Like, yeah. I would assume the offers are. But, I mean, it's much like the guys on the panel say, that the minute another team loses 6 in a row and needs some scoring, or the minute, like, there's that outside pressure to get a deal done, as well as there is on Colorado, if you need some goal scoring, like, do you pay for what they're asking? It's just, it's a weird situation. We'll talk some CFL next on The Big Show with Milt Stegall on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Gypsum Drywall Interiors present Caring for Kids. Support the staff and services of the Children's Hospital Foundation of Manitoba today. Text KIDS to 129090. Standard message rates may apply. Every time you do, Gypsum Drywall Interiors will donate $1 to the Children's Hospital, up to $1,000. Your actions can help the Children's Hospital keep caring for kids across Manitoba. Kids like Michaela, who is currently battling cancer. For more on Caring for Kids, visit TSN1290.ca. This is The Big Show on TSN 1290
I want to remind everybody that you can stream us on the iHeartRadio app and all your favorite devices, or get a customized playlist to suit your mood or activity. Your music, your station's always free. Download the iHeartRadio app today and stream on. Jim, Troy, and Brandon, still to come. Jason Cole, talk NFL at the bottom of the hour. Another chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas. We'll hear from Jets goalie Connor Hellebuck about last night's first win of the regular season for the Jets, 5-2 over the Edmonton Oilers. And we'll tee up the Boston Pizza fan line. Lots to talk about with your calls at 9 o'clock today. Right now, we're going to talk some CFL and some Bombers. And we do it with former Blue Bomber great and a member of the CFL and TSN panel, Mr. Milt Stegall. Good morning, Milt.
Good morning to you guys. How you doing?
Doing well. Last time we talked to you, we were discussing the trade of C.J. Gable to the Edmonton Eskimos. He made his debut yesterday. Your impressions not only on his game, but how he helps the Edmonton Eskimos offense?
Very impressive. I mean, you take out the first play, his first rush in the Edmonton uniform, but besides that, I mean, he did a great job. I was impressed that they utilized him so much with the short time he had to learn the playbook, but I guess that's just a testament to how intelligent he is as a football player, because he was able to go out there. I think he had like 22 rushes, over 100 yards, a catch for a touchdown. He was making some good blocks protecting the quarterback. So he did a great job, and I think that'll pay big dividends for these guys when they're trying to make this playoff push.
Milt, I got to go back to Friday night and the Bomber defense making Mazzoli look like he was a second coming of Doug Flutie or something. Your thoughts on how the defense, or I guess your thoughts on how the offense of Hamilton just shredded up the Bomber D?
Yeah, it wasn't a good look for the Bomber D. You know, those past two games before that, they had actually showed a lot of improvement. I think they had held both their past two opponents to under 30 points, but this game, it was a big setback. And it started with that third play of that first offensive possession for the Hamilton Tiger Cats. They know Speedy Banks. He's not a route runner. He's a playmaker. He has a couple of plays he can make. One is just going deep. The other one is catching the ball and trying to run by you. So not taking anything away from Chris Randall, but, you know, that offense got going early, and it was pretty much lights out from there on out. You know, Mazzoli had a great game. Alex Green had almost 100 yards rushing. So the Bombers have to go back to the drawing board, because if they want to be a championship-caliber team, they can't depend on their offense outscoring opposing teams every single game. They're going to have to get a better effort from their defense game in and game out.
What did you see from Dominic Davis in that game? And if Matt Nichols can't go, is he the right guy to start?
Well, I guess he's their backup. I mean, I think he only had 14 opportunities. It's difficult to tell how well or not well a player is when he's thrown into a situation like that. You know, I'm for sure he's always preparing like he's going to play, but I don't think he was expecting to play and then thrown into a situation like that. I think if he gets an opportunity to play this week, if he knows he's going to be a starter, he'll get an opportunity to practice with the number one, go over the entire playbook, maybe advise Paul LaPolice on some plays that he likes to do in certain situations. So that makes a big difference when you know you're going to start, when you know you practice with the number ones all week long. So the little bit of what we saw on him, it's hard to determine what type of player he's going to be if he actually starts a game.
The Owls eliminated from the playoffs yesterday, Milt. What level of change are you expecting within that organization?
Well, it needs to be a lot of change. But with that fan base, can you afford to just blow it up and start all over again? I mean, they have, I think, 21 players over 30. They have like five or six guys over 35. So you have to make some changes. But that is a fickle fan base. I don't think they're going to allow them to go through that that rebuilding phase. And it's hard to say rebuilding when you're only talking about nine teams. So they need to make some changes. It may start at the GM head coach position. For sure, they'll look into another quarterback, and they need to make a bunch of other changes. So it's difficult, the situation they're in right now, because you need a lot of changes. But if you make too many changes and you let the fan base know that we're rebuilding, it's going to be a difficult sale to those fans in Montreal.
Is Brandon Bridge the new starting quarterback of the Saskatchewan Roughriders in your mind?
No, you know what? I agree with Chris Jones still going with Kevin. I agree with him. I think he needs to get Kevin a half, maybe a quarter and a half, and see if he's able to regain what he was doing towards the beginning of the year. Kevin has been around for a long time. Of course, Brandon Bridge gives him that spark. And if Kevin can't get it done, then you bring Bridge in. So I understand where he's coming from starting Kevin Glenn. I know a lot of fans are going the other way saying he needs to start Bridge because he came in, he led his team to a victory. He's done that a couple of times, but I'm wholeheartedly agree with him starting Kevin. That leash may be a little bit shorter right now, but I think he should start Kevin also.
Your thoughts on that BC-Ottawa game, was that more Ottawa surging or did BC give that one away?
I think it's more Ottawa surging. I mean, we've seen this from BC before. They're just not playing confident football right now. They started off well. Jonathan Jennings, that first drive, he started off well, and I think he ended that half well. But he's just not consistently doing what majority of the people who follow the CFL, who know that the CFL, thought he was going to do this year. Their defense, they're sporadic. They have all the talent in the world. You know, we talked about that receiving core at the beginning of the year. When Chris Williams came back, maybe it was the best receiving core. They're not doing a good job with that. They can't stop the big play. They have some problems stopping the run in tough situations. So right now they're on the outside looking in. If I was a betting man, I would say they would be the team in the West that just aren't going to make the playoffs. And then you have to think, okay, is Wally going to come back? Does he want to finish his coaching career, you know, like that? So they'll have some question marks if they don't make the playoffs when the offseason comes about.
How dangerous is Ottawa come playoff time in your mind?
That's a good question. They can be as dangerous as their quarterback, and I say that because we've seen him do some great things in the regular season, Trevor Harris, but he's never won that big game in the playoff. He's never played in a playoff game, and of course he's never played in the Grey Cup. So that'll be the test right there if he's able to handle all the adversity when it comes to the playoff, because he has no idea what he's getting into. Like I say, he's been great during the regular season, but it remains to see what's going to happen when he's put into that pressure situation once they get into the playoffs. Like I said, I think they'll make the playoffs. I think they'll be able to hold off Hamilton, but we'll just have to wait and see how he handles that adversity.
Milt, the story coming out of D3 and what he's accomplishing, the way this young fella plays out there, becoming a huge fan of Brandon Zylstra, your thoughts on the type of player that he is?
He's a player. He's a tough player, and he was the one who was only – he was the only one in that first half able to make catches with that weather. I think at the end of this year, he'll get some NFL shots. Will he take it or not? All depends on how much they're willing to get up front. But he's a big player. You don't realize how big he is until you actually see him in person. He's about 6'3", maybe 215, 210. He can run. He's very smart. He's a route runner. He's almost made you forget about the highest-priced receiver in the CFL, and Darius Bowman, because of the way he's been playing. So he's exciting to watch. I think they're relying on him now as their number one guy when they get in tight situations, when they need that big play, regardless if it's for 5 yards or if it's for 50 yards. They're relying on him. So it's nice to see what he's doing. We got a taste of it last year. I think he played in like 5 games and had like 500-and-some yards. But the fact that he's able to play in the majority of games this year, he's really showcasing his skills, and it's nice to see.
Milt Stegall of the CFL on TSN panel, of course, former Blue Bomber great, talking CFL with us this morning, 13 minutes past the hour on the Big Show, TSN 1290. Don't take this is a dumb question, Milt, but how good is Bo Levi right now? With obviously, he is who he is, but are things clicking as much as they should be with Bo Levi in Calgary on offense?
And there are no dumb questions, like I tell my sons. The only questions are the ones you don't ask, so. There are no dumb questions.
Thanks, Milt, man. Thanks.
I think with Bo Levi, he's doing just enough. I think he understands that he doesn't have his main weapons there. And the way his defense is playing, he understands that I don't have to go out here and light it up. I don't have to take that many chances because my defense, I mean, we can go out here and score 15 points and we'll win 15-10, and it won't even feel that close because our defense dominated so much. So I think when he slowly starts getting his main weapons back, that things will change. Maybe he'll go out there and try to open it up and take some chances and go out there and score 30, 40 points and throw for 400 yards and 5 touchdowns. But he understands right now, as long as he doesn't make any major mistakes, they're going to win. I mean, they have Roy Finch, the best returner in the game. I think he's hurt right now. And they have a great defense. Like I said, I think it's the best defensive line I've seen since I've been involved in the CFL. So he's that smart where he realizes, I can just come back here and just be average and we'll win games. And when you have a quarterback like that who is not going to allow his ego to step in and try to make big plays every single time they step on the field, you have a pretty good quarterback, and that's the main reason why they're able to win all these games right now.
Great stuff once again, Milt. We appreciate your time, and enjoy the rest of your week.
Appreciate it. Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much, Turtle Man. And Brandon Zylstra is really like the Concordia College Cobbers in Division III.
Wasn't he just like on the practice roster a year or two ago?
Yeah, he played six games. Yeah. Like Milt was saying, six games last year at 508 yards. But you watch him out there. He's such a physical guy. Two catches, everything. That, to me, he's on a one-way ticket to the NFL.
With that size, 215 at wide receiver doesn't last too long in the CFL. He is a beast. Hey, he tore up the Bombers pretty
Super
good, too,
physical.
When they were in Edmonton.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you guys think of the C.J. Gable trade? Like, I think it's outstanding for Edmonton.
For Edmonton?
Yes.
Well, dude, anyone that watched the Hamilton game there, they don't need C.J. Gable. So I think, like, to me, they traded him. They traded C.J. Gable because they had Alex Green sitting there waiting. That Alex Green looks like an absolute beast. And hey, it helped Edmonton, Hamilton get something, but they had Alex Green in waiting. And to me, Alex Green is scary. He looked fantastic against the Bombers.
That's a good point. I guess I'm just thinking from the fact that you're literally three or four deep on the running back chart, and you go out and get a guy like C.J. Gable. Like, the fact that you could go get him. I mean, I know there's only nine teams, but when you need to fill a hole and you can fill it with a guy like that.
I'm kind of fading out on Edmonton. Like, the trade did fill a need for them. There's no doubt about that, but they did not look very impressive against Montreal. Montreal's not a good football team at all.
They've looked blah for a while, or just suspect,
more than they looked good.
And they're getting, but they are still getting healthy, right? So it's, and if Mike Riley catches fire with that receiving core, like, they are a dangerous come playoff time, one game sort of situation. And Winnipeg, hopefully, should be a beauty.
Your next chance to qualify for Hockey Nights in Vegas, and we'll hear from Connor Hellebuck next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
.780-1290. The 12th caller through will be our latest to qualify in the TSN 1290 and redtech.ca Hockey Night in Vegas promotion. We're sending five lucky listeners and their guests to Las Vegas this November, where they'll see the Winnipeg Jets take on the Vegas Golden Knights Friday, November 10th at T-Mobile Arena. That's literally a month from now. You could be in Las Vegas. Return airfare to and from Sin City. Free parking at the Winnipeg Richardson International Airport, courtesy of Park and Fly. Two hockey tickets, Jets versus Golden Knights, November 10th at T-Mobile Arena. By the way, the Golden Knights home opener is tonight in Las Vegas. Four nights accommodation on the Strip and $1,290 in cash to help cover a few extras during your stay. Listen for your chance to qualify and win weekdays at 7:15 a.m., 8:15 a.m., 12:15 p.m., and 5:15 p.m. throughout the day here on TSN 1290. You can also watch for bonus chances to qualify online. Winners will be announced Monday mornings on The Big Show. Next grand prize announcement coming up on October the 23rd, and our final grand prize announcement will be on November the 6th. For more information, you can check out TSN1290.ca. Hockey Nights in Vegas, presented by RedTag.ca, where Canada shops for great deals, and TSN 1290. And just for doing so, you'll get a Jets Gear gift card. Whom is our latest qualifier?
It is Ernie Furchoff.
Ernie Furchoff, how Chazzy are you, sir?
Chazzy.
Ernie's not here, but he's doing good.
Chazzy flew the coop. That's what Chazzy does, man, in and out. Ernie, that's what he's known for.
Ernie's a flybyer.
Yeah.
Flied right by, flew right by.
Where'd Chazzy go? No one ever knows.
Tara and Ernie are our two qualifiers today. They each get Jets Gear gift card. Congratulations, Ernie, and thanks for listening to TSN 1290. Do we have some Connor Hellebuck?
Of course we do.
On last night's 5-2 win, his first of the season in the Jets as well, and Connor Hellebuck's first win versus the Oilers post-game last night after the game.
Well, you know, I've seen a lot of pucks, and that means the guys in front of me are doing the right things, keeping them to the outside, and a lot of good blocks, and so many good back checks. I could just name a few, like Wheels, Mizey, J-Mo had a nice, Shice had one, J-Mo had a nice block in the third. I could go on all day. I think the whole team really bared down on this one, and each chipped in.
We should write down all those nicknames. Yes. That's the funniest part J-Bow. Of it. Yeah.
Do we have any more from Connor Hill? Yeah. He doesn't say a lot.
No, and the clips aren't very long either, so we can kind of cycle through them pretty quickly. But he talked about weathering the storm early when the Oilers kind of compiled a pretty big shot advantage.
Yeah, you know what? I think that's what goalies are here for. It's early in the year, and we're finding our groove on our PK. And I don't know, one save leads to another, and now everyone's buzzing. And then like what we did at the end there, we pretty much shut them down. So I think it's a team game, and you know, the PK played really well tonight and blocked a lot of shots.
That was a scary moment. 22 seconds in, the old "how you doing" slash from Morrissey is, oh dear. Imagine his, like, what's the first thing in his head? What's the first thing in Maurice's head when that happens? You're just like, oh, here we go. Come on, fellas.
What did you think of the penalty kill last night? Because, I mean, your goaltender is always a big part of it. I thought he played real good, especially against that power play.
Yeah, penalty kill looked – I was more intrigued by what – Paul Maurice is doing late in games when he starts using some of the, you know, to have Scheifele and Wheeler out there for the final power play of the game, or maybe it was the one with, yeah, it was at the 17-35
round,
late in the third period there, where it's like, okay, getting serious, can't allow a goal here, and you put out Scheifele and Wheeler. It's a little bit interesting to me, that whole sort of approach, and I've made it clear where I think you need to have, like, just for instance, having Scheifele and Wheeler out there, compare that to the speed of Lowry and Mathias. What are you getting, a half a step on every single transaction out on the ice? So at some point in time, I would, you know, sure they go 0-for-2 or the penalty kill has a perfect night last night on those two kills. But at some point in time, you look at the other penalty kills across the league, and I'll say this until they change it, you got to have your upper echelon talent out there and from a puck awareness and smart sticks and all the rest of it out there. They're going to be the guys that help you with the PK.
Well, they were able to hold the Oilers' best offensive weapon against the Jets off the board. So anytime you can keep Mark Letestu to zeros, you're going to have a good chance of winning the game if you're the Jets.
The high heat from Letestu every time he faces the Oilers.
But you know what's cool, though? Like, he's their fourth-line center, and where is he on that pot? Like, you know, Munsey was talking about the Jets having depth. I don't think many people think – you don't think of the Jets in depth. The Jets in depth, maybe compared to what they've had in the past. But when you're talking about the fourth-line center for the Edmonton Oilers, is the middle guy in their 1-3-1 on the power play? How impressive is that? Like, he's not standing in front of the net. He's their guy
in the middle. Setup guy for the one-timer in high tip, yeah.
Pretty freaking cool.
I thought, this is a side note, I thought Adam Lowry played really good last night. Like on the back check, on the penalty kill, 152, 13:36 of ice time, I thought he was one of the better Jets actually on the ice. I know a lot of people are up in arms about his ice time and everything else, but 13:36 last night, I thought he played well. Here's Connor Hellebuck on how he felt himself he played. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I felt good about my game, but, you know, the guys in front of me made it easy. I was able to kind of visualize where the puck's going and get myself in the right spots, and the guys are keeping them outside, so it wasn't too hard.
That was the level of maintained structure last night wasn't even comparable to the gong shows of game 1 and 2. So I do believe Connor Hellebuck was put in a situation last night and made the most of it. I do believe if that was Steve Mason, that a fairly similar type of result would have transpired. It was a big-time shift in that structure in front of the goalie, and it was welcomed in about damn time.
And I thought, you know, one of the things he did struggle with a bit last year was pucks through traffic and just kind of losing them, and I thought he improved on that. I thought he looked much more adept. There was some times they had a lot of point shots and a lot of perimeter shots, but he looked pretty comfortable, and there weren't really a whole lot of rebounds either or kind of misplays from the points. He was much better at kind of battling through the traffic to be able to see what was coming his way.
I thought he tracked the puck well last night as well. We'll talk about this on the Boss Pizza Fan Line at 9 o'clock, but up next we touch on the NFL with our good friend Jason Cole from the Bleacher Report next on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Our province is packed with shining stars in the world of sports. Every week, TSN 1290 would like to showcase and reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do. Nominate a Manitoban athlete, coach, or volunteer who's dedicated to making their sport matter. Every Friday on the Big Show, we'll showcase a Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit TSN1290.ca to nominate your sports star. And we could be featuring them very soon, including this Friday right here on The Big Show. TSN 1290, Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki with you. And we're going to talk NFL now with Jason Cole, the Bleacher Report. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning. What's going on?
Not too much. Two questions regarding last night's Monday Nighter. What was your thoughts on Mitchell Trubisky? And should Sam Bradford have even been playing in that game?
Sam shouldn't have been playing, but this is a tough one, because if the doctor says you're okay and clears you, then I don't have a big second guess other than maybe he just got worse during the game. I thought that he was, when I watched him the first quarter, I thought Sam was all right, but then as the game went on, it was obvious that he got increasingly lame in that game and couldn't go. As for Trubisky, that was fun. If you're a Chicago fan, there wasn't a lot there, but there's not a lot to that offense other than they don't have a lot of weapons. So it's hard to really judge a kid when he's trying to do a lot by himself the first time out. But I thought he handled it, the game wasn't too big for him. He handled the situation. He seemed to understand what he needed to do. Whether he could do it or not was it at this point in time because of the people around him. That's a different question. But he seemed to handle it just fine. He looked very well prepared. They're just, the Bears have no real weapons outside of the two running backs. They're just okay, and a tight end is pretty decent.
Jason, I've been around some wild players and some wild coaches. Yesterday morning to wake up and to see the whole thing with Chris Forster, I found myself yesterday kind of giggling about it, talking to some other people about it, and just the shockingness of it. And I can't imagine what the guys in the locker room, how they're talking about it. But maybe just your thoughts on just the wildness and the unthinkable aspect of that coming to light.
Well, we've had some other bizarre things with Coach. I mean, Joe Cullen, driving naked into a fast food.
Fair. Touché.
This one's a little bit of a hard one for me because I know Chris Forster really well, and I like him. I know he's had some other problems in the past, nothing of this scale. That's disturbing, number one. Number two, the circumstances. You're sending that to a stripper, who you profess your love for. It's like bizarrely, sadly comedic, right? In a really dark way. And so, on surface, you laugh, and we'll all get a laugh and a giggle out of it. When you really start to think about it, it's like, wow, how far gone was this person's life that that's what they felt like they needed to do. I guess that's it becomes kind of sad at the end of it.
That's a good point, actually, when we talk about this story. It's bizarre, but it is. When you look at all that he's throwing away right now, that is sad. If you've even played receiver in high school, should you send your resume to the New York Giants?
Yep. Tryouts are wide open this week, I'll tell you that. They got two spots to fill. I don't know how bad Sterling Shepard is. Dwayne Harris is hurt. I've never seen a team lose four receivers in one game. I've seen some teams get down to four offensive linemen and have to play a tight end, an offensive tackle, some things like that. But four guys at that position, that's bizarre. And basically that went from being a bad season that would be poorly handled to a season that's basically a wreck, right? Like in one day, they went from just looking like a poorly managed team to poorly managed with no shot at victory. And all of a sudden, the Giants, who a lot of people were picking as sort of a dark horse Super Bowl contender, are now contending for probably the number one pick and maybe the chance to pick Eli Manning's replacement. Like, that's going to be the story. This is in a year where everybody thought the Jets were the team that was going to be looking at the number one overall pick. So it's fascinating how the NFL turns in a matter of less than a month and a half.
Jason, it always bugged me, and I kind of always feel that at times Ben Roethlisberger would lean a little bit much on his playthrough injury thing and almost like it was drawing attention to himself and stuff like that. And then it really bothered me this offseason when he was the whole retirement thing and more or less holding his teammates and the organization to some degree hostage a little bit late into the whole thing. Like, you know, don't talk about it, just do it when it's time. And then after this game upcoming, to say, you know, he's the leader of this team, and to say to the press, maybe I don't have it anymore, and the whole retirement thing coming up again. Your thoughts on the situation with Ben Roethlisberger?
Look, Ben's always been a drama queen. I mean, it's, you know, when he had said he had a temperature of 100, you know, like a 105 that one time, even though that's kind of impossible, or yeah, all the things that he's done over the years. He does do a lot of drawing of attention to himself. And they've tolerated it because he's freaking talented, right? So but when you start talking about retiring in this game, you basically have retired. And that was my thought during the entire offseason, and it seems to be confirming itself here as we go through the season and we look at how he's performing and what he's doing. And now, you know, maybe he's just joking that he's lost it, but maybe there's a grain of truth. And maybe it's time for Pittsburgh to say, okay, we have to officially draft a quarterback and be ready to completely move on by the end of this season and be done with the Roethlisberger era, even though we thought we had 3 or 4 years left of it. And I think if I'm the Steelers, that's exactly what I'm thinking today.
The Kansas City Chiefs, the only undefeated team left. You know, Alex Smith is so interesting to me. Not that I ever thought he was a bad quarterback, but why is he playing this good now at this stage of his career? Has he always been this good in your mind?
I think he's playing really well because the team around him is excellent. Look, they've got one of the best tight ends in the league. They've got a receiver who's not necessarily a receiver, but he's a dynamic weapon, right? And then they bring in this rookie running back who's really good with a good offensive line. You got a great play caller. I don't see Alex Smith all of a sudden doing things that he was never capable of doing. I just see him executing an offense really, really well and other people making plays around him. Like, his arm hasn't gotten any better. And there are still times when they're inside the 20 where he's not taking a whole lot of chances, right? Like, he's not trying to fit balls in really tight areas and succeeding with that. I mean, there's a reason that they settled for 5 field goals on Sunday night. But they scored 42 because they've got a lot of guys to play. That's a great looking roster. And this is the kind of time when a guy like Alex Smith can win a title, when everything is great around him, and you don't see a lot of dynamic, great defenses. Now, we're going to see a really big test for Alex Smith when he plays Denver and see if he can continue to do these things against Denver, the way he has, this season. But I don't see anything usually different other than, that is a really, really well put together team with a complementary defense loaded with really good pass rushers that has covered for not having Eric Berry.
Jason, the way they do, Trump and Pence pour a little bit more fuel on this whole anthem thing on the weekend. And then Jerry Jones also sort of doubles down on his stance. So as I understand it, there's been 7 owners telling their players basically that they're not allowed to kneel or take any sort of protest. Is this coming to a head here?
Yeah, it is. And this is probably not the way that it's probably not going to go over well long term, because when you tell people to just shut up when they're protesting, ultimately that doesn't make the protest end. It just means you told them to shut up. and are forced to will. So it's going to aggravate players more in the long run. The NFL should have been more responsive earlier. And if they had been more responsive earlier to the players and designed some programs that took this protest away from the field, then, you know, then it would have solved itself and not made it look like Trump imposed his will and that Pence imposed their will, especially when Pence is doing this. I mean, like, this was just a gigantic PR stunt. I mean, it was really clear that it was a PR stunt on Sunday. But it feeds the Trump base, and it puts pressure on the league. And the funny part is, there's no appreciable effect on TV ratings. None that I can see. TV ratings, for the most part, appear to be up from last year. Not stunningly up, but still up. And so as much as Trump continues to banter and, you know, bring a black eye to the NFL, I don't really think it's working because people still want to be entertained on Sunday.
Where does this go in your mind, Jason, now that the, you know, Jerry Jones and the NFL have the anthem rules and everything else? Where is this going to end in your mind?
I don't think it truly – I mean, look, they can essentially put their foot down and tell players, look, you got to stand, and or else you're not going to play, and you know, we'll get rid of you. And they can threaten them with the Colin Kaepernick treatment, and they can get away with it mostly because the quarterbacks are not doing this, right? Like, you don't see Russell Wilson kneeling, you don't see Aaron Rodgers kneeling, you don't see Matt Ryan, you don't see Tom Brady kneeling, right? If those guys were kneeling, then they'd have a much bigger problem, right? But they're not. And so it's the rest of the guys, while they may be really talented, like a Michael Bennett or a Marshawn Lynch or somebody like that, those guys are disposable, just like Colin Kaepernick is disposable because he's not a great quarterback. And so they can impose their will. They can do what they want. They can put an end to it if they really want to put an end to it. But again, that doesn't mean that the feeling has gone away. And somewhere along the line, the players will, in essence, somehow get their pound of flesh, and they will be heard, and they will want to get something out of this. And the NFL could have made that happen. Like, they could have come up with social programs in each one of these cities and said, hey, look, we are trying to help you address what you think is a serious issue. And they could have made it much more positive. Instead, they've made it much more negative, and they've just put their foot down. And in the end, I think that that's going to come back and boomerang on them.
Last thing, Jason, we were talking earlier this week. Take the Super Bowl titles away. Who's better, Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers?
Well, you guys know how I feel about Aaron Rodgers. That's long established on this radio station. My man crush on him. Aaron Rodgers is the most physically gifted thrower and athlete I think I've ever seen play quarterback, right? Like, he can throw from all sorts of different angles and make things that are incredibly hard look incredibly easy, okay? It's freakish how good he is. Like the touchdown pass to Jordy Nelson at the back of the end zone looks like it's just a normal play after a play action. But he does, like, the play action and then recoils to throw so fast and all in, like, one motion without having to even really move his feet. And most quarterbacks can't do that. And because most quarterbacks can't do that, the defense actually gets a chance to react to it, right? He gives the defense no chance to react in any reasonable way because of the way that he can throw. So Aaron Rodgers is the most physically gifted, but he doesn't have the resume of Tom Brady. So when you're rating quarterbacks, in the end of the day, when you're saying which one's the greatest of all time, Brady wins. And so that's how that measures itself out. Rodgers could make up some of the difference here, but it's a skill set versus an accomplishment.
Great stuff, Jason. We appreciate your time as always. Enjoy the rest of your week.
No problem, guys. Be good. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Jason.
Jason Cole from the Bleacher Report will tee up the Boston Pizza fan line next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Boston Pizza Fan Line open in 8 minutes. 780-1290 or text your thoughts to 1290-90 on The Big Show with Jim Tilth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki. And we'll start with the Jets getting their first win of the regular season, a 5-2 victory over the Edmonton Oilers. Connor Hellebuck gets the start of net. He gets the win. Dustin Byfuglien, Paul Maurice said after the game, out with a lower body injury. Tucker Poolman plays his first National Hockey League game of his career, ironically, on the same night that Blake Wheeler plays his 700th career NHL game.
That's ironic.
Well, one guy's getting one, the other guy's hitting the
700th. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
That's opposite ends of the spectrum.
Okay.
You don't find that ironic?
Not really.
What are the chances a guy playing his 700th game the same night as a teammate playing his first?
I don't know.
Not very good.
Yeah.
Sort of high odds. You're on fire today, Westy. Westwood hates Dustin Byfuglien. I'm starting the hashtag right now. And also Nick Ehlers with a hat trick and a four-point night. Your thoughts on the game, first of all?
Phew. If I could sum it up in one word, that would be what it was. But it was nice, wasn't it? It just felt good to see the level of structure remain intact for pretty much the entirety of the game. It was a little worried, right? The early penalty was a little uh-oh, and then the tie 2-2 was a little concerned, and then Ehlers with that beauty wrister. But by and large, an entertaining game, fun to watch the boys fit back into that structure and, you know, take us. They needed to, a profound change needed to happen, and it developed in front of Connor Hellebuck, who also answered the bell with a great opportunity. So just all the way around, it was a fun game to watch, and it was nice to see the guys gain some traction with that structure.
Yeah, I mean, it was good to see that they're capable of putting together a decent defensive performance at the least. And realistically, that's all they need. They don't need to be a defensive powerhouse to put together a 650 win. That's really it's something teetering along that line.
That's
where
a very good point.
Put the D in decent.
It's a great point because we sit here now at this point we evaluate every goal against, and the realistically, you're going to make mistakes. You're going to get scored on. It's going to happen. But it's been so poor defensively that we're at this point where just play decent. You're going to give up two or three goals to the Edmonton Oilers. You're going to give up some goals some night. You're going to be off some night. But get a base of standard defensive system and play where with some up and downs, you're collectively good at it.
And that's all really Paul Maurice, even that's all he was kind of asking for, right? I think in camp and early on, just saying, hey, a certain level, like a baseline of defensive awareness, and let's avoid the train wrecks that lead to utter chaos in the D zone. And last night, they didn't happen. You didn't see, for the most part, outside of the Kulikov-Myers thing, where I thought Myers did a great job of adjusting to Kulikov when he started to go a little, like he can travel a little bit in the D zone, but Myers, you could actually see Myers looking at him and adjusting to him as he was moving. But just that baseline of some level of decency from an integrity standpoint defensively for this team, and that's that's exactly all that Maurice is asking for, right? And they delivered that last night.
Your thoughts on the game last night and the play of Connor Hellebuck, Tucker Poolman, Nick Ehlers, and going into Vancouver, 780-1290 on the Boston Pizza Fan Line. We also talked about the Blue Bombers. They return to practice today, and all eyes will be on whether Matt Nichols is out there with that banged-up hand or if it's Dominic Davis and Mr. Lefevre heading into the game against BC on Saturday.
Yeah, they've come out and announced so far. If I saw on TSN yesterday, that the Bombers have announced if Nichols is not available, it will be Dom Davis. And I'm surprised by that. And just because I thought when signed that Dan Lefevre was a fantastic backup, some similarities to me with Matt Nichols, and especially under the tutelage of Paul Lapolice, a guy that's won games before in the CFL, who is a starter for a period of time, suffered an injury, and is sort of in the same process that Matt Nichols is in reestablishing himself as a potential starter, and then where Nichols is right now is without question a starter. That's kind of where Dan Lefevre is. So I'm a little bit surprised that they're going with Dom Davis. The second spot isn't wrapped up here. So they must feel Dom Davis gives them a better chance. From where I sit and what I've witnessed with Lefevre and seen from Dom Davis, I respectfully disagree.
I would like to see Dom Davis get the start. And if the leash is just a half, I'd be okay with that too. Give him a half and see what he's got, and a chance to really prove himself. And like Milt kind of said, give him the full week to prepare if that's the case, if he's going to be your number one guy. I wouldn't even be that upset if Lefevre started. My main thing is if Matt Nichols is 90% healthy, put him on the bench. If he's 95% healthy, don't even give him a helmet and shoulder pads. You need to make sure if it costs you this week, but it gives you a chance in the playoffs, it would be foolish for the Bombers to put so much potential risk into playing a not fully healthy Matt Nichols in this game, especially when it's something as – it's not a major injury, but when it's the throwing hand, they need to make sure that thing is taken care of before he steps anywhere near a field.
I got a Lefevre! And the only prescription is your calls on the Boss Pizza fan line. 780-1290 next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290, Jim Tilt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, and your calls on the Boston Pizza fan line. Jets beat the Oilers 5-3. Connor Hellebuyck gets the win. Dustin Byfuglien has lower body injury. Tucker Poolman makes his NHL debut. Nick Ehlers has a four-point night, including a hat trick. Bombers back at practice today. All eyes to see if Matt Nichols is good enough to practice. And everything else going on around the NFL, and anything else you want to talk about. Vegas Golden Knights, home opener tonight. That will be very interesting to see. 780-1290 or text 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. Howie, you're on The Big Show, kicking us off today. Go ahead, Howie.
Oh, hi. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I always learn something from you guys. I thought I'd return the favor today.
Hey, we appreciate you taking the time to call in for the first time.
So there's three things that are not ironic. One of them is rain on your wedding day. That's just bad luck. The other is a free ride when you're already there. That's just bad timing. And Wheeler's 700th game and Fuhlman's first game, that's also not ironic. That's just a big number and a little number.
That's not ironic that Tucker Poolman could have played game two of the season. He could have started the season when he was at his 698th game, 699th game. He might not have played last night if Byfuglien was healthy. He could play a week from now. It's not unique or ironic that one guy's playing his 700th game on the same day that a teammate's playing his first?
No.
All right.
Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
Thanks, Howie. Howie, I'm stunned that that's, of all the things discussed in this program, that's what prompted you to call in for the first time ever.
He's a big Alanis Morissette fan.
Thanks for the call, Howie.
Rain on your wedding day, getting a ride when you're already there, meeting the man of your dreams, and then his beautiful wife. That's just sick. Thanks, Howie. We appreciate the call. On the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Brent, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Jim, I'm sorry. Your high school diploma has been revoked.
For the irony comment?
Yeah. That's not irony. I don't know if you know what that word means, clearly. But it is a unique coincidence. That's it.
Okay.
My comment... Sorry, that's enough for enough goofing on you today. It's funny. I missed the second period of the game, but what I saw from the Jets is it was nice to see no defensemen wandering up at the blue line when they're killing penalties. It was nice to see that in a game for a change.
Agreed.
And I was thinking about it. When the Jets made the playoffs, it was largely due to replacements basically on the back end, if I remember correctly. And all the guys that were in there were mostly stay-at-home simple guys. I'm just wondering that maybe that's more what they need. We know we need people who play better all-around game, but even a person with little offensive upside but just stays at home maybe is just something they need because they got talented forwards. That's my comment. I'll hang up and listen.
Wait before you go, Brent.
The thing to me that
Wait.
Well, I'm here.
The definition of irony is the expression of one's meaning by using language that normally signifies the opposite.
Brother, you need to give this one up.
The opposite of 700 games is one.
No,
and it's
not.
Usually, irony is usually typically for, well, what's the opposite of one game in the NHL?
That's way too cosmic for me to wrestle with.
Exactly. Where's Cosmic Bob?
Yeah, that's who we need
and
to
it's
get
used,
on.
Irony is also typically used for humorous effect.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The word like, it is a simile, not an irony, yeah. Too. That's why Alanis Morissette got in trouble in her song.
Yeah.
She was using similes.
Just stand down here,
yeah,
sir.
Yeah, she's...
Stand down, JT.
She's really cringing about using it ill-advisedly as well. Ill-advisedly is something you might want to look up to, Brent.
I'm sure her bank account...
That's what I'm telling you. And the ironic point of that is mine's the opposite of her bank account, so... Anyways, thank you, Brent. We appreciate it.
The defenseman thing... I think sometimes that gets lumped into a lack of capability of making some real nice zone exit type passes and stuff like that. Like you can, you know, it doesn't need to be an offensive defenseman and a stay-at-home defenseman, and that's it, right? Like doesn't need to be black and white like that. Jacob Trouba is typically a very responsible defensive player who's pretty nifty once moving the puck up. I think Morrissey, the same type of thing. Myers has that same sort of mindset. Paul Maurice touched on this during training camp where, he mentioned, and I'm paraphrasing here, but basically give the puck to our forwards and let them do their stuff. Right, so... And Dustin Byfuglien is fantastic at zone exit passes. It's one of his strengths. That first pass to get out of the zone is one of his strengths as well. But what you need for sure, and we were talking about it, putting the D in decent defense is all the Jets need here, right? Like just have some level that you're a bar here that we're working with to provide that defensive structure and then blossom offensively from that.
And I think when we look back at the playoff run the Jets had in the regular season, at least, I think too many people point to, the Jets had scrubs on defense and that's why we won, when in reality, the team defense was smothering.
Everybody picked it up because of the concern, right? Because of that concern, everyone cranked it up defensively a little bit.
When Trouba came back, when Bogosian came back, when everybody healthy came back, did they miss a beat defensively? Hell no. Mm-hmm. They were just as strong. It's much more the commitment, and you can't just look at the defense pairings talking about defense, and you can't just look at the forwards. It has to be all five of those guys out there. And the Jets in that playoff season choked teams out and gave them no room to make any sort of plays, and we're still waiting for that.
To be honest, that's why when people sit here and go, Charlie, how do you get rid of him and all this, that's fair if that's what you want to do. But Charlie Huddy isn't the one who implements the system. He's the one who's told what it is and then works with the defenseman, runs the shifts and stuff. Like, he's not sitting there telling Paul Maurice, this is what we're going to do. It doesn't work that way. He's the assistant coach. He's doing what the head coach tells him and obviously trying to get the guys to buy in, to help teach it, to help them get them to play that way. But much to Ruwicki's point of when those guys were out and then they came back, it's about a team concept playing it in a collectively, not just about individual defensive play.
Yeah, and I think also important to note during that time frame of the Jets making the playoff run and honing in there, that was also, without any question, the most dialed in and attentive that we've seen Dustin Byfuglien play. That's the very best we've ever seen from him. And that was just sort of part of the everything involved here in what was the strength of that team was their commitment to defense.
Thanks for the call, Brent. We appreciate it, my man. Moving on to the next one, 780-1290, the Boss of Pizza fan line here on the Big Show. Terry, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Morning, gentlemen. Watched the game yesterday, and I think like most fans, kind of waiting, we got him. Edmonton was saying we got him where we want him at 2-0 and then that 2-goal. So I was quite impressed, still cautious. Hopefully they learned that lesson. I saw some real good defensive play in our zone, and it was good. It was positive. So let's hopefully they can carry that forward. Go, you know, for the next, you know, what is it, 80 games left or 79 games left? JT, sometimes my, I think I couldn't agree more with Troy. I'm going to make a statement here. I think that this team is better without Dustin Byfuglien. And here's why. Because the pros and cons, the risk-reward for this guy, our defensive core and how we play in our end is more stable, more simplified versus having Byfuglien. And he's an alpha male in that dressing room and on that D. So as Byfuglien goes, the other guys kind of take their lead. And he could score as many goals as he wants. It does not matter. Career overall, he's like a minus 30. So to me is I would sooner have a guy, like it was strange. Tucker Poolman, first game, played as Byfuglien should be playing all the time. And this is a guy in his first NHL game. I would say, Buff, see that? Watch him. One game, and he's playing exactly how you should be playing all the time. We don't need you guys to need you to score all the time. See number 29? You see number 27 up on the forwards? Those are the guys, they score first. Unless your name's Carlson, you can do both extraordinarily. Stick to defense. Anyways, that's my two cents, gentlemen. I'll hang up and listen to your comments.
Okay, thanks, Terry. Look, I get that about Dustin Byfuglien, but as this team shifts, like first and foremost, he was sixth in the NHL in scoring last year for defensemen. Like that's a lot of offense you're getting rid of. Can he play better? Does he need to play better? Did I like his first two games? No. Have we seen this throughout his career? Yes. Do the pros outweigh the negatives? I think so. However, first injury, what are you doing depth-wise? Like, it just, to get rid of him outright, to me, makes this team worse in my mind.
But if you do trade him, for instance, if that were to happen, it's not like a Jacob Trouba thing where you're moving Trouba and you got to get a right side guy, right? You can bring back, you have a multitude, you can bring back someone on the left depth, and who knows what comes back for him. And so, like, from a depth perspective, you can help to remedy that depending on who and what comes back. But I'm just to jump on this a little bit more here, from the team dynamic, you know, it's not like you and defensively use Dustin Byfuglien and his 50-ish points, 52, 53 the last 2 years. It's not like that's gone and there's nothing that steps in for that. Other guys are going to be on the power play and like maybe there's a net loss of 20 points with losing Dustin Byfuglien sort of thing. But also this is a team that needs to emphasize things defensively and that can take a little bit back, lose someone with the offensive prowess of Dustin Byfuglien and survive that as a team if you're more sound overall defensively. And it's not even, guys, like it's not even on the ice that I think is going to have the greatest impact here. I think it's a mindset of a team where you have an individual like Dustin Byfuglien on your team, and inherent with that is the up and down roller coaster of attention to detail that has haunted this team since they've arrived from Atlanta, really. And the only time we've seen it dialed in was that year with Paul Maurice when they made the playoffs there. That's it. Since then, it's been fleeting, and Paul Maurice has been trying to extract it from this group. And you see certain guys like a Mark Scheifele and a Blake Wheeler that really seem to breathe hockey with every single breath that they take. And there's a certain attention to detail for the most part from the big majority of these guys. And then you've got an alpha dog in the locker room where hockey is, that's how we, you know, it's secondary almost. Like his approach, there's just a lack of absoluteness and a consistency. Like if you want to become a Stanley Cup contending team, and if you want to finish above the playoff line consistently, then you have to bring a certain level of consistency night in, night out, night in, night out. And I have been asking the question for years, is Dustin Byfuglien capable of that? And I don't think he is.
The whole thing about him in the room and the alpha male, that's not a bad thing. Like, he's not a Vander Kane in that room.
They love him in that room. I know.
So, like, you have to consider that. Look, there are all the, I'm not arguing anything about his game and the points you're making. what I'm saying is to just get rid of him, that is a huge hole on this team. And with the depth they have and where you're at, if it's a reduced role, if it's like he moved down to 3-4 last year with no problem. He's willingly gone to forward, even though he said, I don't want to be up there, but I'll do it. Like, it's not like he's not a team guy and he's not willing to do what it takes to win. I think that when you take his sort of lackadaisical approach to it, you know who else doesn't like hockey when he's not playing it is Brian Little. Never watches it, doesn't pay attention to the stats, doesn't care what's going on. He just has told me, like, to come to the rink. I don't watch the game when I go away. I don't pay attention to the standings. There's this whole idea that he doesn't care because of his sort of approach to the game, and he does care. He wants to win.
He doesn't want – everybody wants to win. But there is a level of consistency in when you what you witness on the ice with your eyes when you can lock 15-second portions of things on the ice where you – and anyone ask, what in the F is that?
Right. And we agree on a lot of the points about how to get him more dialed in, play better, all that. I just think to outright move him leaves a big hole on this team where it sits for this season. We'll get to more of your calls. Thanks, Terry, on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290, when we come back to the Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back to the Boston Pizza Fan Line on the Big Show, 780-1290 on TSN 1290. Jay, you're on the program. Go ahead, Jay. Hi, Jay. Try again, Jay. We'll go to Sandy. Sandy, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. I called yesterday. I'm the girl that called yesterday. Anyway, I just got 5 quick points I'm going to make. First of all, congratulations to Nikolai Ehlers. Well-deserved hattie. He's so exciting to watch. The second point I wanted to make is that Trouba and Morrissey had a great game yesterday. Pullman, I loved watching him yesterday, and I hope he gets into the Canuck game coming up. The next point I wanted to make is that I could feel, watching the game last night, the calming, strong, steady effect coming from the D last night, so I can imagine how the players felt. And the last point I want to make is that Hellebuyck was interviewed, and he commented that he did play a great game, but it was a big part in how the guys played in front of him. I would love to see Mason back in, because Mason wasn't given a fair shake, because the guys in front that played in front of him those first two games were nothing at all. They weren't the same guys that played in front of Hilly last night. So I'm going to hang up and listen for your comments. Thank you.
Thanks, Sandy, for the phone call. That is the question. And I do believe they will go back to Mason. I think that he'll get the game in Vancouver and go forward from that. But it is interesting. I do have, I guess I am pondering the thought of what they'll do, given the way Connor Hellebuyck played.
Yeah, to me, it's going to be a pretty clear indication of their organizational understanding as to if Steve Mason is their starter, if they've designated him the starter, then absolutely I expect Steve Mason to be back in net with Vancouver. If this is more of a sort of a competition, platoon, whoever their hottest goalie is going to play, then they will put Connor Hellebuyck in. I think we're just going to have an absolute understanding, or a much more clear understanding, if it isn't already, as to if this is Steve Mason's job or if it's more of a platoon-type situation. I really like the what you commented on, Sandy, as far as structure as well. It was noticeable in watching the game. Of course, Connor Hellebuyck commented on it, and there's no question whatsoever that structure was maintained in a much more superior way in Game 3 last night than it was in the first couple of games. And boy, does that ever make things more simple for everybody out in the ice.
Thanks for the call, Sandy. We appreciate it. 780-1290 on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, or you can text your thoughts to 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. Rick, you are on the Big Show. Go ahead, Rick.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out what you guys were talking about with that Alanis Morissette there. It's stymied, actually.
Yeah,
you get cover all topics here on the Big Show.
Yeah, you guys are very well-rounded that way. I have to give you credit.
Yeah.
But,
I don't like talking about Alanis Morissette. She broke my cousin's heart. But go ahead.
For real?
He's tapping into his Ryan Reynolds crap again.
Oh, God.
Crap. Yeah, that's my family, man. Have a little respect. Anyways, go ahead, Rick.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to echo what everyone says, but I kind of agree with Troy. I've been saying it also, is that, you can't have a guy like Buff that breaks structure too often. I mean, he brings a lot of unique things to the table. Some of them are really good, but the bad ones are what's been killing the team. It's like he just can't play within structure. So having said that, I don't think you can trade him because right now, I mean, I think he's almost untradeable with the contract and such. I don't know what you wouldn't get value. I think you just have to, do what you do and sit him occasionally if you have to. Have the ability or the Yaitis to sit him. And because Pullman looked pretty good. Hellebuck was good last night. You have to give him a lot of credit. But the defense within their structure kept a lot to the outside, and that was pretty good. With respect to Pullman, if you watch him, even in the preseason, usually it seems like you get a positive result. I mean, he's pretty slick with the puck. He's nothing flashy, but somehow he gets it up to the forwards and gets them moving. Sean Mathias, I think he has like James Wright-itis. He's in position. He's working his butt off, but he has no finish whatsoever, the poor guy. And Brendan Tanev, this is the last thing I guess I'll finish with. He's got ragged a lot on Twitter and this and that, but he hasn't looked too bad. I mean, he has to stop taking stupid penalties, obviously, but he hasn't looked too bad. If he can bring this for 82 and stay out of the box, he's a good fourth liner. Now, so there's hope. There's light at the end of the tunnel, maybe. So let's just hope they can come back level and let's just reset. And you don't want Buff to be hurt, and if he comes back in, I mean, God, I hope he can play good. But I have my doubts. I'm a little westy. I've said it for years. I don't think you can move forward with him somehow. So,
and here's the thing. Thanks, Rick. And here's the thing I believe with Dustin Byfuglien is to consider a trade fair market value. How do you establish that with Buff? Like, you want to take Buff at his best or the Buff that scares everybody? And the Tanev thing is interesting. I thought that line looked pretty good last night as well. And then you come and look at the possession numbers, and they're at like 28%, that line last night. And Brendan Tanev is operating at 41% possession percent. So, like, that line last night, they're allowing 10 shots against and generate 4. Right, so it's interesting. Brendan Tanev with the possession numbers still struggle when he looks like he's doing something positive.
And I think wasn't Marco Dano the worst of the possessions?
They're all equal.
Yeah. Thanks. We're going to get to more of your calls when we come back on the Voss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca and the Boston Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Lots of calls to get to with Jim, Troy, and Brandon. Brady, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. Buff's not going anywhere. He's just in that normal cycle of trade him, love him, re-sign him. But you watched the power play last night. With him not there and it being Morrissey, the Oilers were able to let a guy sneak over and put some close some line space. So with Buffalo on that top power play, you've got to respect that shot. So I think you just shelter his minutes, more power play time, and he's fine, I think.
You know what I'll suggest to you there, Brady, though? I don't, like, what in the world is Maurice doing having Myers and Trouba on that second power play? Like, who in the NHL right now has two defensemen on the power play? Just don't see that very often. Trouba should be on that top power play. So long as Byfuglien's out here, Trouba should be there, and you just need Myers at the top of the second one. You don't have enough offensive talent to put four forwards out there?
Yeah, I agree there. I like Myers and Trouba on that second unit. I think those two guys, they're really able to get that shot through. But yeah, I agree. You could, bump the can even to that first unit. He looks good on that half wall.
I'm really surprised at the power play time for Tyler Myers. Not that he can't do it and not that I don't think he's doing okay at it. And I know he played it in Buffalo, but I just thought, I guess they were looking for him to get back and play some tough minutes and penalty kill. I'm really surprised at how much they're using him on the power play this year. But I think he looks good on it. I just thought that they would go a different direction.
And then I'll just throw one more comment out there, and then I'll hang up. I'm just going to be the glass half empty on Hellebuyck. I think he looked great. I'm very happy for him that he was able to have a performance like that. But he did this last year. He would have a 40-save shutout or a 38-save, you know, two goals against like he did last night or whatever, 37. And he'll go out and he'll mishandle the puck. He'll fight the puck and have a bad game and get pulled in the first. So I think they need to start him Thursday, see how he can handle that consistency because that was a major issue last year. But hopefully he turns it on. All right, thanks, guys. Bye.
Take care, man.
Thanks, Brady. Yeah, I mean, it's three games in and it's the first game. And you know, you want to see some progression, and we'll see what else he can do. But definitely it's better than the opposite, like the whole team the first two games.
He's looked good so far, and that's really all you could ask, right, of a guy that needs a rebound type year.
Thanks, Brady. We appreciate the call. Jeremy, you're on the Big Show, TSN 1290. Go ahead.
Hello. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Oh, just tickety-boo. So I love the show, listen to it all the time. But and I don't think Buffalo's getting traded, but it's, you know, the what-if, right? What, like, a defense kind of needing Colorado Avalanche, a third-line center of Duchesne or Little, however that would work out. I don't know. It's just an interesting question. And then, like Troy said a couple of minutes ago, I don't think there's an easy answer. You know, what are the comparables? What do you think you could get for a guy like Buffalo? That's all I have. Have a good one.
Thanks.
Yeah, I think that is a huge question, and it covers such a spectrum. There was a time last year we were arguing on the show where it was like people, and I think it was you, JT, that said, well, what GM? We're all watching the same thing. What GM's going to want a guy 4 years left at $7.6 million? And I spoke to someone in the States who is entrenched in the NHL, and he thought the same thing, that there's no way you can move Dustin Byfuglien at 7.6. 4 years left. He's 32 years old. Like, that's interesting. But I dare say, guys, that, like, I don't think you need to get whatever people, like, to establish the fair market value of Dustin Byfuglien could be probably a master's thesis or something like that. Like, that, it's an interesting to try and do that, is it? But I don't think you need to get back exactly the value of Dustin Byfuglien. You know, I put faith in the scouting department of the Winnipeg Jets, and if you bring back whatever comes back, if there's some level of prospect in that, I'm fine and dandy with it. Another thing to consider when Dustin Byfuglien is moved, that opens up a big chunk of salary cap at $7.6 million, right? So that's part of the equation also in if there's ever a situation when he is moved.
Yeah, I think it fluctuates up and down, and you know, if you're looking at what Dustin Byfuglien brings to the game and you look at his faults, I just look at a guy like Kevin Shattenkirk and how highly sought after he was come playoff time and how little he played for the Washington Capitals. I think there'd be a team around playoff time that would be very interested in grabbing his services as opposed to right now. But what the market would be, I have no idea right now. This early in the season. But that's interesting. You know, if you were going to deal him, the Colorado situation is, with the money and everything else, it would be something to look at. Jeremy, thanks for the call. Mike, you're on the Big Show, TSN 1290. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, morning, boys. I don't want to engage in the definition of irony this morning, but I will suggest that it was not a coincidence that the Jets played sound defensive hockey without Byfuglien in the lineup. The comment you made earlier, leader in the room, got it, granted. I think what happens, though, is you see a guy like Byfuglien, they all have a lot of respect for him. They like the guy. They see him flying around the ice like a beer league hockey player, doing all sorts of weird things. And all of a sudden, the guys go, hey, you know what? It works. It works for Buff. He's a kind of our leader. I guess that means I don't have to play sound defensively. And I don't think it's an easy, you know, an automatic that would happen, but it's obvious that happens. They play far looser. They played far looser in the first two games. And I point to, you know, in the Leafs game, there's a two-on-one when Marner's coming down the ice, and he's south of the faceoff circle, not in a great shooting position, on a two-on-one-ish with Marlowe. Marlowe's in the slot. Last time I checked, the slot is a high-scoring area. South of the faceoff dot, a little bit towards the wall, is not a high-scoring faceoff area. What does Byfuglien do? He slides down on his belly to cover Marner, I guess. I don't know what he was doing. Leaves Marlowe wide open in the slot. I mean, that's exactly how you don't play a two-on-one, and we teach that to 8 and 9-year-olds. So, you know, I think the guys see this, and they're like, oh, he's all over the ice, he's behind the net. You know, I guess that's just how we're going to play. And they play pond hockey, and it's I think it's very interesting when he's not in the lineup. You know, Pullman comes in, he hasn't been tainted yet with the kind of the do-whatever-the-hell-you-want-on-the-ice sort of mindset. And all of a sudden, they play reasonably soundly defensively. So I'm a huge, huge advocate of moving Bufflin. Let's get what we can for the guy, and let's actually play smarter hockey in our own zone. And quickly, JT, on your comment on Huddy, I agree with, you know, his job's to implement what the coach is doing, but his job also is to teach. And I don't think he was a great defensive defenseman to start with. He played with Paul Coffey. You know, he was probably of the two, the more defensive of the two, but I don't think by default that means he was sound defensively. So his job is to show body positioning, stick positioning, little things you can do within a game. I don't know if he's the guy to do that, but I think Bufflin's got to go. Let's get what we can for the guy, get a couple of high prospects, maybe a good solid third-line player and a high prospect, and let's move on.
But the one thing I'll say about Huddy, Mike, is which of the defense aren't getting better?
Well,
like if it's teaching positioning and all this, how far has Jacob Trouba come? How far has Josh Morrissey come? How far has, like, I mean, I get the fever around getting rid of assistant coaches. I just want to emphasize when it's brought up what their actual roles are.
Great. Sure, JT, that's fair. But I think also their role is to, you know, with the experience he's got and all this kind of stuff, his job is to teach. And again, we don't know what goes on behind the scenes. Perhaps he's a terrific teacher. I just say the product of what we see where we allow these lapses to occur and we have this run around in your own zone like a tire fire in your own zone kind of thing, that you know, that shouldn't be going on. So I look at, for example, Kulikov. If you look at the first game, you know, he's their first goal on Kadri's goal is Kulikov is way over on the wrong side of the ice with Myers, leaving Kadri wide open on the post. But then, you know, yesterday's game, he's maybe in a better position. I'm not saying there's a direct correlation, but I think there is a correlation that when Buff's there, you know, where the guys are floating around, you know, Huddy's job is to get these guys back on track and playing in the right position. And, you know, step one, bye-bye Buff. Step two, short leash for Huddy.
And we had a junior coach of Buff call us in year one or two when we were talking about Buff and the up and down of it and the trying to compel him to play a certain way. And this was off air, and the coach said, hey, man, every single coach that has ever had to deal with Dustin Bufflin has tried to extract a certain understanding or level of consistency from Dustin Bufflin. No one's been able to do it. And I agree with you. I agree with you in that when – and I think Kulikov's got a little bit of this in him, and I was giggling watching Myers deal with it and adjust his positioning on the ice when Kulikov would wander left-right. But when you see that, for instance, the Bufflin chase Matthews all the way across the ice, the level of chaos that commits, and you see – right, we end up blaming a forward at the point of the goal for that, but for everyone to adjust and try and come to an understanding of who they got and pick up the most dangerous men, all that sort of thing, just the level of chaos that happens there, it's at Buff at his worst, he creates a real chaotic environment. Buff at his best is one of the most dynamic and impactful players in the NHL, and so this is the conundrum of Dustin Bufflin, right? Like this is the guy that everybody gets. And that's why when we're talking about trying to establish his fair market value, if they ever do move him, good luck with that.
Thanks for the call, Mike, on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Jack, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. Yeah, I was absolutely thrilled that Byfuglien was out of the lineup last night. Like, this guy can't defend his zone, and he has no intentions of defending his home zone. We had a kid that come in the lineup last night, first game in the NHL, defended it the way it's supposed to be done. We all know that this team can score goals, and we just have to take care of our zone.
Look, I'm as excited as everybody about Tucker Poolman and how well he's not only played last night but through training camp. But am I the only one sitting here going, it's one game?
No, I agree. It's only one game. And already he's ahead of Bufflin defending his own zone. Like I say,
he's better than Bufflin right now.
Yes. The first two games that I've watched, Byfuglien again, same thing, floating around his blue line, and guys are battling to try and keep it out of their own net. He's just floating around his own blue line. Like,
the one thing
has he has no concept of defense.
The one thing I would say there with that, if there was, for instance, if Dustin Bufflin misses the game against Vancouver, that whenever Bufflin's out of the lineup, Tucker Pullman doesn't need to be better than Dustin Bufflin because he's definitely playing a different role, right? Like, that's the third pair, yeah. Right side. You need to be solid from that perspective. And it bumps up the Trouba-Myers thing. That's more standard, really, to have that sort of strength distributed on one side of the ice, right? So I think if and when Tucker Pullman is called for any period of time here to step into this team and make the top six there and be in the 5-6 pairing, he doesn't have to be better than Bufflin. You just need to answer the bell in that 5-6 role.
I just think it's one game.
Yeah, it is one game. And it's a positive one game. Everything we've seen so far from this year,
positive.
Tucker Pullman looks like he is, at least he's trending towards being this year's Josh Morrissey. Just super steady, smart out there.
Thanks for the call, Jack. We appreciate it on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Adam, you're on the program. Go ahead, Adam.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling in.
I'm not going to go out of that debacle.
Adam, you got to turn your radio down, please.
Okay.
Yeah, just you're echoing, so go ahead.
Okay, sorry about that. Yeah.
No, that's okay.
Yeah, I'm not going to go on about the Bufflin thing. That's kind of a little bit of a broken record, but I will say that I agree with what's being said. And, you know, Paul Maurice has got to not be afraid to bench him, and that's all there is to it. But a few things I wanted to mention was our penalty kill. If you look at how we're playing structurally on the penalty kill, I'm not sure, you know, what kind of system we're running. Like, our forwards, we got one up front, and then we got our other forward right behind the forward, and then we got 2D on each post. And our forwards are kind of flip-flopping sides, and it's leaving a lot of space between our forwards and the other team's D-men. And they're getting a lot of shots off, and then there's a ton of traffic in front of our net. Our players are collapsing on top of our goalie, and it's a little bit of a mess. And, you know, I think I'm not sure what that structure, that system is. I don't know if you guys know what that is.
Yeah, I was looking at it last night because afternoon ride that JP Vigée was on, and he talked about what they're doing is it's almost like the diamond of the power play on the penalty kill. And they have it's sort of like a line, and then the defensemen are on the sides to sort of take away the back door. And that's where it's broken down once I heard Vigée explain it in the first two games. Was when the defensemen on the sides would leave, like Kulikov or Bufflin, and then that back door is open. But I get it's designed, I guess, and I was watching it last night. I don't know if I've ever seen it before, but basically you're right. Like, it's two forwards, one in front of the other one, and the high forward goes to where the puck goes on the top, and then the other forward kicks out. And when it's back at the point, they go back into that line.
It's garbage, whatever it is, and they need to get away from it. I thought last night, the penalty kill kills both penalties, but I didn't think it was from strong penalty kill play. It was more good fortune that Edmonton didn't take advantage of situations. I'm baffled as well, as I think most Jets fans are, with what they're trying to accomplish and how they're implementing their penalty kill.
Yeah, what that system or tactic is actually, it's called the check press, and it's something, ironically, the Flyers used in full force last year. Their penalty kill was not very effective as well. It can work. It's just kind of, it can be hard to execute at certain times too. You have to be very disciplined in how you approach it. And yeah,
it's new too. Like what these guys are doing. It's three games in. I thought it looked better last night. I'm interested to see how it looks if they continue with it going forward. Like it's not like, I mean, everybody involved in it, it's new. They didn't do it last year. So it's three games in.
Well, I can't stand how much time they give players at the point, specifically at the point and setting up for the bomb and all kinds of traffic. And hearing Paul Maurice saying that their goal is to jump on the rebounds before the opposing team gets to it. Like, they're allowing the shot to occur, and you're praying that you get to the rebound first.
Please hold on the line. We'll get to more of your calls. We have to break right now, and we'll be right back on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290 on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca. We got some stuff to give away at the end of this segment. So thank you for listening on TSN 1290. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you in the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. John, you're on the program. Go ahead. Hi, John.
Let's try Chris.
Chris, you're on the big show. Go ahead, Chris. Anybody?
Cool. Let's try Steve.
Steve, you're on the big show. Go ahead.
Yes, I won't let you down. I'm here.
Attaboy, Stevie boy.
Anyway, it was a refreshing game yesterday. The structure and the commitment to defense was there was a lot of discipline there, and you could really tell. I mean, they what was it? 22 shots in the first period, I believe, and Hellebuck was making some key saves at key times. I mean, that could have been easily Jets could have been down two or three in the first period. They got out of it 0-0. So what you found, I saw anyway, I think you guys probably saw it too, was the confidence, team confidence was just growing exponentially into the second. Then there was that little 40-second blip, right, where they tied it up 2-2. I thought it was a good call for the timeout, and it really settled them down. And then, you know, they got those two quick ones by Ehlers there again. So confidence you know, you're seeing that, and Hellebuck was playing with confidence too, which was refreshing to see. I just wanted to touch on the Bufflin thing, since that's the seems to be the theme of the show. But personally, I think this, and kudos to management and coaching, I think this was a benching, and I think they're sending a message to him, and I guess the next step is to see how Bufflin responds to it. I don't think he's going to play in Vancouver. He'll still be injured, in quotations, and I think he will play. When's their next home game?
Saturday against Carolina.
Yeah, he'll dress for that, and yeah, we'll see how he responds. Anyway, enjoy the show. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, John. I still think even if he's a healthy scratch this year, the team's better with him on it than off it.
I agree, though, John, where, you know, maybe he is injured. But the one thing I've learned for sure behind closed doors that to not believe everything that is said, right, that if it's much more digestible for it to be presented as it was instead of causing the firestorm of saying that he's a healthy scratch, just I've seen enough to raise an eyebrow and wonder kind of along the same lines as you, John. I wonder the same thing.
And ironically, don't believe everything you hear on the radio. Ironically. We'll leave it with that. And a pair of tickets to give away to the Bombers and the BC Lions Saturday, October the 14th at IGF, 780-1290. We also have a pair of tickets to the Moose home opener versus the Cleveland Monsters on Friday the 13th. Monsters in town. Bell MTS Place, 780-1290. 12th and 13th caller through. We'll get you to one of those games. On behalf of Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, and myself, Jim Toth, we thank you for listening. The Big Show will be back tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. on TSN 1290.